brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here tonight on the big program. So much to get to, so much to talk about. A week, really an amazing week. The governor's speech has been pretty much, you know, outside of the horrible weather that we've been having, the governor's speech has been, you know, the focus of everything. And, you know, I got to be honest, I'm not seeing the outrage that I think you should be seeing. This budget is a campaign budget. This budget is not the priorities that this governor holds dear. This is the campaign budget. And understand that. Put this in the right context. This is a campaign year budget. And even looking at it through the perspective of it being just that, understand, the speech was written by a Bush flack. The speech was written with the intent that it's going to be just, hey, we're kicking off to November. And even then, horribly, horribly underwhelming. And really not visionary in any way, shape, or form. For me, the idea that, you know, you look at the $3 billion that they've gutted from education over the last 3 years, that they've taken and given away to private for-profit corporations. You would think, now look, you give me $3 billion to just frit away, the economy's got to move, got to do something. Because the argument, understand, and look, I get the argument. If we give business all this money, we give them all the resource, they're going to spend it constructively and create jobs. I understand the argument. I'm just smart enough to realize that the practice doesn't happen. This idea that if we give them the money, they'll do something with it that benefits us is not going to happen. You know, and I've said this before 1,000 times. If you give me a boatload of cash and say, go create jobs, I'm going to go, well, why? I got a boatload of cash. Why do I need to do that? Give me some demand, and then I'll try and figure out how to meet that demand. And if that means I got to hire people to do that, I'll do it. But saying, here's a boatload of cash for really doing nothing. And you know, this week we did find out that Eugene DePasquale, the Auditor General, is actually looking into finally somebody looking into it. Finally somebody who's willing to say, you know, just a thought, maybe we should think about this idea of, oh, I don't know. maybe, just a thought, of making sure that the money that we're giving away, the huge amount of cash that we're handing off, is actually benefiting us in one way, shape, or form, is actually doing what we're told it was going to do, is actually going to create the jobs, that there's some measure of accountability. And the party that talks of accountability, the party that talks of meritocracy, kind of falling short on all of that stuff. And I just find it interesting that the campaign speech that our governor gave, not so much helpful. And, you know, as I look at this and as I continue to view this, you have to wonder. And you look at the underwhelming job numbers that came out. 113,000 jobs added in the month of January. Another disappointing month. Now, wasn't as bad as December. December had only 74,000 new jobs added. Yet somehow, miraculously, the unemployment rate dropped again. And gee, I wonder how that happened. Oh, yeah. They left town in December and didn't pass an extension. So all of those people, that 1.7 million people who have fallen off, you know, the 1.7 million people who, because the Republicans have filibustered again, aren't going to be counted as unemployed anymore because they're not on the rolls. Yeah, that's how the number came down. And I go back to, you know, all of the money that we're handing out. Because you look at Wall Street, things are wonderful on Wall Street. Corporate profits are high. You would think, one would think, that it would be time, if the conservative ideology, the economic ideology of the right, what they're peddling, the austerity party, the low taxes, the deregulation, all of that. Because we're at a time where, you know, honestly, taxes have not been lower in my lifetime than they are right now. And regulations are being slashed and burned. I mean, you look at West Virginia. The Freedom Water thing just blows my mind. The Freedom Industries, they weren't really regulated. So no one has any idea when the spills started. You kind of got to ask why. So we're going to talk about a bunch of that stuff tonight. We're going to talk with a long-term unemployed worker and find out her story. It is also our Future Friday time for the folks from the Campaign for America's Future to come and talk to us about their Wingnut of the Week awards. All that, your thoughts, your questions, your comments, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. When you call, I don't have a producer, still in the process of finding one. The auto attendant will pick up, say, hey, hold on, we'll be with you in a minute. And when I go to break, I will be more than happy to pick up the call and talk with you and get you on the air. Pretty simple stuff. So anyway, during the program, you can also email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I do answer all emails. Personally, I got one from Stephen yesterday that, you know, kind of summed up the first hour of yesterday's program. Stephen writes, Rick, I just heard your conversation with last night's caller on the regulations. I completely understand what you were saying, but unfortunately, as a society, Stephen writes, we have been spoon-fed the anti-regulation screed for so long, it's the only response we're allowed. He says, I did not understand what the caller was saying about the NLRB. I think, he says, I hope he walked away from having called into the program a little bit better educated. Thanks for your work and dedication for working people. You're a loyal listener, Steve. Stephen, you know, here's the thing. That's the hope, is by having these conversations. And at no point did anyone beat up on the caller, because I don't do that. But if you're wrong, I'm going to tell you you're wrong. And if I'm wrong, I'll be happy to admit when I'm wrong. Put that out, and I am wrong, I will admit it. The reality in this, though, is, you know, NLRB, which we will talk about in the third hour of the program, the NLRB has been the red meat that's been thrown out to the right. And while most people have never even heard of the National Labor Relations Board, don't know what it does, don't know what it's for, and I blame labor for not explaining that. I blame workers for not telling their children. I blame past generations for not pointing out how important this board is. Because the Labor Relations Board, they're the ones who oversee the organizing elections. And if you have, and they decide who's in the bargaining units, who's out, who can vote, who can't, all of these things. So if you do like they did during the Bush years, and I found it interesting that, you know, the caller said, well, you're always beating up on the Bushes. Well, it's the Bushes who did this stuff. Who else am I, you know, who else are you going to go after? You're going to say it was somebody else? No, it was the Bushes. They did it. Admit it. Be honest. Just like all of the things that I hated about Clinton. I'm honest about it. Voted for the guy, but still not happy with a lot of stuff. You get that with any party, with any person, with any politician. It's a mixed bag. The question is the mix of the bag mostly bad and worse, or somewhat good and the rest bad? I mean, those are the choices we've been giving politically lately, which is why I keep saying I want working people to be running for office. I want people that have walked in my shoes. I want people who've stayed up all night, worked 24 hours, stayed up 24 hours so that they could work and spend time with their kids. I want people who know how tough it is. But you look at Washington, you look at Harrisburg, these are people who are pampered. These are people who really don't get how difficult it is for working people to get by. Now there's some. And then in the next segment, we're going to talk with our good friend Eddie Dave Pashinsky, who I think is a true working class hero. But there are folks who, they don't. And it's the people who, and I break it down simply like this. It's the people who are the ones who are against extending unemployment benefits. It's the ones who are against extending the Medicaid system so that we're covering low-wage workers with insurance. And, you know, that means most workers. Understand, the numbers have been going down steadily over the last generation of employer-based health care. Employers don't want it. Nor should, and I think, I got to be honest, as an employee, I don't want my employer holding my health care. My health care. I don't want them holding my family hostage. And I think women, you got to, right now is a perfect opportunity to look at your employer and go, well, I'm going to give them that kind of power over my body, over my well-being, over my future, that if they have an objection to birth control, that I don't get it. I don't get reproductive. I really stop and think about how much power we have given the employer class in this country. But back to Stephen's email. My point was not a deregulation screed. My point was there are good regulations, there are bad regulations, there are good processes and procedures, and then there are horrible processes and procedures. The horrible process and procedure is me having to go to a private company to get my fingerprints taken, and I don't know what happens to any of that stuff. Do you? Of course not. The woman behind the counter didn't know. She's used to putting a stamp on something and sending it down the road. Now she's being, oh, here, make sure people put their finger on this little box. That was my concern. We have regulations in place for a reason, and those regulations went through a process. Now we can go back and we can examine them. I mean, the Patriot Act, I think, is one of those things we should have scrapped almost immediately. But, you know, hey, I remember going to meetings where people were going, oh, please, please, put a chip in my arm so you know I'm okay so I don't have to wait in line and be inconvenienced. Don't you get sick of that at some point? I mean, really. So much going on. Anyway, going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'm going to talk with Eddie DePaschinski about the budget. And I'd be interested in your thoughts about the governor's budget. You can email me, Rick, at therickSmithShow.com, or give us a call here, 1-888-520-RICK. Understand, no producer, so you'll go right to hold. The message will say, hey, thanks for calling. Stay on hold. Listen to the phone. Don't listen to your radio because it's on a delay, of course, because can't have people swearing and carrying on. I will answer when I can, and we'll get you on as soon as possible. That's how things are going to work for the foreseeable future, since my producer has moved on, and I wish him nothing, as I've said a number of times, nothing but the best in the warmth of sunny California. Or, you know, I got to be honest, I kind of wish I was. It's too freaking cold and too much ice. I don't mind snow. It's this ice that's killing me. Anyway, quick break, right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Don't know much about history. Don't know much biology. Don't know much about the science book. Don't know much about the French I took. But I do know that I need you. And if you fall for all the crap I spew, what a wonderful world this would be.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. The National Labor Relations Board proposed a new rule this week that would shorten the process for union organizing elections. AFL-CIO President Rich Trunka says it's a step in the right direction. Teamsters President Jim Hoffa says his union supports the new rules. Hoffa says it will help stop companies from abusing the legal process to stall elections and delay the union organizing that workers want. The proposed rule change would require businesses to provide email addresses and phone numbers of employees to give unions fair access to the workers in an election. A similar rule was proposed 2 years ago, and business groups challenged it in court. NLRB Chairman Mark Pierce says the new rule will speed up union organizing elections, getting rid of delays and inefficiencies that hurt both workers and employers. At the United Auto Workers Legislative Conference in Washington this week, Vice President Joe Biden told UAW delegates that right-wing forces are waging long-term, intense, concentrated war on the House of Labor. Biden said unions like the UAW are the only ones keeping the barbarians from the gates. Biden says the right to collective bargaining itself is being attacked, and if unions vanish, Biden said, the middle class evaporates. Biden was hailed by UAW President Bob King, a strong and steadfast friend of the UAW.
I still know how to pronounce the word union. Union. One of our problems is not enough elected officials remember how to pronounce the word union. Everybody talks about workers. I talk about unions. Every other worker, white collar and blue collar, not a union member, has figured out the reason they had benefits in the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, and the 90s was because of organized labor.
Roughly 600 workers at five nursing homes in Connecticut operated by Healthbridge have had pay cuts imposed on them by a bankruptcy court. The cuts will average about $30 a week. Healthbridge runs five union nursing homes and three non-union nursing homes in Connecticut. In 2012, worker pensions were eliminated and their health care costs were increased. SEIU Local 1199 is fighting to protect the livelihoods of the workers, and Healthbridge is accused under federal law of alleged union busting.
Fear, intimidation, even racism is part of that plan every day. And we go through a lot of that. Put fear on the workers, we can control them. But they don't ever give us a fair chance to say, you know, why we need a union. We need a voice at this plant. And the intimidation and the fear, it really needs to stop.
Keep these worker and union voices on the air by supporting Workers Independent News. Donate now at laborradio.org. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Right now, we are hard at work to bring a major natural gas processing plant to southwestern Pennsylvania. The best argument we can make to the company behind the project is Pennsylvania's embrace of free markets.
Yeah, the free markets, yes, the best thing, free markets, that's why they came. Yeah, it was the free markets, all right, yeah. It wasn't the fact that the gas was here. That wasn't it. It wasn't the location that was perfect. No, that wasn't it. It was probably, more than anything, the heaping mounds of free cash. I think that had a lot to do with it. And you look at the big campaign speech that happened on Tuesday under the guise of a budget speech. And again, the priorities of this governor, not with you, not with me, not with our, certainly not with our kids. I know the reports had been, oh, he's adding money to education. Isn't that cute? No. Think about the last 3 years, $3 billion he's hacked out of K-12 education. And now he's going to put a pittance back because it's an election year? Are we going to fall for that? I sure hope not. Which is why we've asked our good friend Eddie Day Pashinsky, state representative, to come talk with us about the big budget and what the attacks are coming up here in the coming weeks. Eddie, thanks for taking time for us.
It's always a pleasure, Rick.
You know, I look at I know you were at the big speech on Tuesday. I'm not going to put words in your mouth. What were your thoughts?
Well, let me try to be a little diplomatic here. There was no real excitement here, and you said it earlier that this was an election speech, trying to put in dollars into various areas to try to encourage people now to support the governor in his reelection bid. But it's the same old from before. It's, you know, the pay Rob Peter to pay Paul type thing. So he is putting more money into education, but he's also reducing the amount of money that's needed for the pension system, which is increasing the debt, which is something I thought Republicans definitely didn't want to do, and yet increasing it dramatically over the next decade or so. So it's been that kind of smoke and mirrors type project here as far as the budget is concerned, and they're really the only claim to fame they really have is the fact that they've had 3 years of an on-time budget. However, the budget itself has not been very good. And then they have left on the table some very important resources that could help the locals, that could help the county, that could help the people of Pennsylvania. He again gave the gas companies a pass. Now, I'm all for helping business out. I think I made that statement on your show before, and the Democrats are not against business. We want to work with them as well. But if we're going to be giving out tax breaks to the large corporations, then I want to see some jobs.
Yeah.
We want to see some guaranteed jobs here. And although the governor touted 140,000 jobs in his 3 years, we're still well behind our neighboring states. Other than New York, we rank 41st.
Let me ask you about that. Let me ask you about that, because, you know, I kept hearing the governor's speech, and I've heard his flax coming out saying that the Marcellus Shale is booming. It's enormous. The jobs being created. I think they came up with something like 200,000 jobs, which, you know, when you look at the numbers, it's a lot fuzzy. But if things are doing so well there, and all of this money that we're handing out, because I guess from the statistics that I've seen, we've handed out more than twice as much money to big corporations than we need to fund our pensions. So our priorities are a little skewed. But if all this stuff is going so well, Marcellus Shale's booming, we're bringing all these jobs in with all these sweeteners and all this candy, why are we 47th, 48th in the country in job creation?
I think the number's 41st, but that's still far enough to the bottom. Well, again, that's why we're questioning a lot of his numbers. And he doesn't count into his job creation all the jobs that he has eliminated. You know, he had over 20,000 jobs in education alone that went down the tubes, and most of them were living wage jobs, which then contribute a great deal back to the economy and into our tax structure. He's eliminated, I think, about 3,000 public service jobs within the state government. And appears to brag about it. Now, look, nobody wants fat. There should never be waste. We should always work towards eliminating waste. But let me tell you what. Everybody that has a job that lives in Pennsylvania buys Pennsylvania products and contributes to the economy. So sitting on the Saudi Arabia of natural gas, it would seem to me that we should be doing a heck of a lot better, especially with the job creation. If you go up into Bradford County and Western Pennsylvania, you'll still see a lot of Oklahoma, Texas, Louisiana, all these license plates. And if you remember in some of our discussions, Rick, when Marcellus started to be the issue and we could not get the severance tax passed and the Republicans took over the House, the Senate, and the gubernatorial mansion, we then said, okay, if we can't get an extraction tax, let's put some kind of a percentage. Make sure we get at least 75% to 80% Pennsylvania jobs.
Right.
No, they wouldn't go along with that.
Jeez.
They wouldn't guarantee us any jobs. It's the same thing with that cracker patent out in western Pennsylvania, which still hasn't come about. They were offering tens of millions of dollars in tax rebates over a 10, 15-year period. Then we said, okay, we'll give them the tax break, but how about guaranteeing a 75% to 80% all Pennsylvania jobs? They wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
This is where we're having trouble trying to figure out, you know, exactly what side this governor's on. Is he on the side of the big corporations? And we've given them, you know, over $2 billion in tax breaks, including this year, $2 billion. And we don't see that job, you know, creation at the level that it should be for those kind of tax breaks. There's also some studies. Real quick, there's also some studies that show tax breaks for the companies that are here doesn't necessarily mean they're going to add jobs.
Right.
You know, they can only produce so much, and people only buy so much.
Exactly.
So if the people aren't buying anymore, they're not going to create any more jobs.
Yeah.
They're just putting more money in the pockets of the big guys, who then are finding places to hide the tax dollars and not pay their fair share in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, they just shovel it through that magic box in Delaware. But you threw up the $2 billion number. And, you know, that's we've given away a little over $2 billion in tax breaks and subsidies and sweeteners and what I call welfare. We've given a lot of corporate welfare out well beyond what we give in societal welfare to people who I don't think really need it, but that's a whole other argument. And looking at that money that we've made the priority of taking health care away from low-wage workers, taking food out of the mouths of children, laying off teachers and gutting education and all of those things, doing away with the general assistance budget that helps 70,000 of our most vulnerable, all of those things, the priorities that this governor has done, it's not that we're broke, it's that we prioritize taking that money from the most vulnerable and giving it to the most wealthy, in my view.
Well, that's exactly what's happening. And, Rick, again, you and I have talked about this, and I know you've talked about it on your radio. That is the national plan that was devised by Alex. This is all Alex doing. And the governor is a disciple of the Alex committee, you know, the Koch brothers. So their idea is we're going to create the jobs, and the jobs we create, you, the little guy, you pay the taxes. I don't have to pay the taxes because of the fact that I'm creating the job. Now, I don't mean to say that is the same for all businesses, but right now that's the driving force behind the ALEC model. And I'm hoping that the people and your listeners recognize the fact that every day people go to work, their taxes are automatically taken out of their paycheck. They're doing their part, yep, contributing back to the stability of the state and the country. And these guys that have so much, really, you can only eat steak so many times, you can only drive so many Bentleys, and you can only have so many summer homes and jet planes. They're making so much money, the only thing they can do with it now is either buy more stuff for themselves or hide the money away.
Or buy more control. And I was going to bring up, since you brought up Alec and the Koch brothers, you know, as you've said, there's only so much you can buy. There's only so much consumption you can have. At some point, you've got to use your money for something else. And we've given them hundreds of billions, if not trillions of dollars to the very top of the economic scale. Now they're using the money to control us, so they have more power. And I look at Alec and I look at the Koch brothers, who I understand were in town over Christmas and have made a couple of trips to our fair state to push this assault on workers under the guise of, and I, you know, you gotta love the euphemistic language, the soft kind of fuzzy language of, well, it's paycheck protection, which there's no protection from wage theft, no protection from hour theft, no protection from you being fired, no protection whatsoever. All it is gutting workers' ability to fund their unions.
Yeah, and keep in mind that is a negotiable item.
Yes.
The employer and employee negotiate that. And I want to make this point. Most of the relationships between employers and employees are very productive and good.
Yes.
You know, they make it seem as though every union is having a problem with employers. That is not the case, at least certainly not in my experience. Yes, there are certain times that you have contractual problems, and there are times that, you know, you're trying to get a few more bucks for the guys that you represent. But the bottom line is that is a negotiable item. And with the technology today, it really doesn't cost anything.
Whoa, hold on. It doesn't cost anything. I was told it's, oh, my goodness, it's the end of the world. This could balance our budget.
No, absolutely not. With the computer system that we have, it's a line item. You plug it in. It does it automatically with your financial institution. That is not a big deal. They're making it into a big deal. And you know why? You know why they're doing that? They're trying to say that the dues money is going for political purposes. A slight amount, less than 10%, may go into some mailers. But keep in mind that the people in that union elect their leaders who then go and represent them. That's
yeah.
what the whole purpose is. And I want to make another point. You know, because they only focused in, like, on unions and teachers. Let me tell you something. You know, the townships, the cities, the boroughs, you know, they have lobbyists. They get state money. They get tax dollars.
Uh-huh.
They have and they're doing their thing. They're trying to demonize the idea that a union is using that money and the taxpayers are paying for this process. That's a very unfair claim.
It is unfair, but here's the reality, and I'm sure you know this, but no dues monies go to politics. The dues and money that people pay. Well, the dues money that people pay go to enforcing the contract and organizing that stuff. Now, PAC money, that union set up PACs just like, you know, anybody else, that goes for politics. But dues money does not go for any politics, which is why it infuriates me that I keep hearing the Tea Party think tanks and all of these right-wing groups keep getting away with the lie that you can spend dues dollars on politics. You can't do it.
Yeah, but that's their whole mantra. You know, they demonize something. They mislead people.
They lie.
They have no problem saying mistruths, you know, for their own good. And that confuses a lot of the folks, and they get the wrong idea. That's why, you know, what you're doing and your show, and we've got to try to get the truth out there. And the truth is, you know what? You know what the truth is, really, Rick? The union guys are the soldiers for every worker in this country.
Absolutely.
The union guys are the ones that go and they sit at the negotiating table and they fight for better wages, for better benefits, for safer working conditions. And when they are able to acquire that in their contract, guess what? The non-union guys also benefit from that.
Absolutely.
So let's not ever forget there is a balance that we can attain in this country that will allow business to prosper and their company owners and their shareholders to prosper and still treat those that produce the product with respect, with quality pay, quality benefits, and safe working conditions.
I'm with you, brother.
That can be achieved.
I'm with you. And, you know, but the reality is, and I don't know if you've seen the clip. It was back, you know, a couple of years back when Diane Hendricks, the billionaire, the inherited billionaire of the building and construction products in ABC Building Supply out in Wisconsin, was talking to Scott Walker. And you know, just the most tingly in the panties fashion is she's going, oh, when can we possibly have right to work? And I'm going, you know, what is it about, you know, this woman who can have anything she wants? She's a billionaire numerous times over. There's virtually nothing on this planet that she cannot afford. What is it about this thing that gets her all excited and all tingly? And it's power. It's that absolute, complete, and total power and control over all of us. And that's what scares me and why I think this assault on unions and on organized workers is so important that we fight back, because they're the last group of people who are going to stand up to these folks and say no.
That's exactly correct. And you use the word. I'm going to give you two words today, want and need. That individual that is that very wealthy billionaire, millionaire, whatever you want to call them, they want more. They want more power. They want more money. The people that we're fighting for are the people that need certain things just to live.
Yep.
Need certain things to give their family a chance for a future. Need certain things so that they have some quality of life. The word is need and want. And right now, it appears that this governor is giving to the people that want rather than to the people that need.
Perfect. Yeah, I mean, right there. Let me ask you really quick, you know, and looking at this House Bill 1507, Senate Bill 1034. And listen, folks, we need to be calling our representatives often. No to your House members on 1507. No to your senator on 1034. What are the possibilities this is going to get to a vote? I'm hearing mixed stories that it's in the state government committee, which it should fly out of, but the Republicans are still twisting arms to try and get the last couple of votes to get it passed. What are the possibilities of this coming up?
Well, I'll tell you what, this particular bill and this concept may be that one issue that has brought all unions together for the first time in quite a while.
Yeah.
They had a large press conference. Some call it a rally. Pardon me. But there were thousands of union representatives throughout the Capitol. They ended up having to close the Capitol. There were so many people, they wouldn't let any more people in. Busloads came from all over Pennsylvania to demonstrate that enough is enough. We're not taking any more. The line in the sand has been drawn. And I think for the first time in quite a while, the gentleman on the other side, the members on the other side of the aisle, are really starting to be concerned about their future in politics because of the fact that this is affecting so many people. And the concept is just so unfair, unfounded, actually, like so much of their positions are unfounded. I think they are now having second thoughts.
Good.
That's the best I can tell you right now. That's the feeling that I see, you know, within the House. I do know that the chairman of the state government committee has on the floor on two occasions requested a meeting to consider that bill, and for some reason it still wasn't brought up. But I think they're all having second thoughts about how they're going to pursue this.
Well, I know the guy who's the chairman of the state government committee, Daryl Metcalf, has got to be all fuzzy in the panties over getting this out, because organized labor and workers in general are one of his key targets. Last line of questioning I've got for you: the governor, in his speech, said it was, and you know, it was a Bush speechwriter who threw it out there. You got to have a funny line. It's last call on liquor, according to our governor. Again, it's been 3 years. How much time, energy, money, and resource have we wasted that we could have been putting into actually a jobs plan to get people back to work instead of this, which is going to sell off a very valuable state asset, fire some 5,000 employees, and make our state worse off? How much more are we going to put up with?
Well, let's be clear about that. If we put the time into modernizing the system to make a more consumer convenience by expanding sales on Sunday, by putting our liquor stores, wine and spirit stores in our grocery stores, making it more consumer-friendly, consumer-convenient, we estimate that would be an additional $125 million a year. So if he would have did that in his first year, we would have $375 million more. When you take a look at the Delaware loophole, if he were to have closed those loopholes 3 years ago, we'd have about another $500 million to the good. If he would have done the extraction tax like he should have 3 years ago, 4 years ago, we'd have had almost another $1 billion extra and not be in the deficit. Believe me, if he would have managed, fiscally been prudent, I understand the cutting of the waste, cutting of the fat, that's fine. We're all for that. But he did not manage the resources that he had available to him. And as a result, now, you know, he's demonstrating that we're in the red, and he's making everyone else suffer again. The bottom line is the dollars are there. He can change those dollars around. It doesn't mean a tax hike. It means to make sure you utilize the resources that are available to you appropriately.
Yep.
And represent to the people.
I was underwhelmed by the speech and his priorities, his leadership, I question. But I got to tell you, this November, the guy's got to go. And a lot of the Republican leadership's got to go, because, you know, you think of all of the time, the energy, the money, the everything that we've wasted trying to privatize the wine and spirit shops, trying to hock off the lottery, the gerrymandering, the voter suppression, all of this stuff.
Voter ID, yep.
I'm going, you know, my head's about to explode, going, hey, what if we were to take all that time, all that energy, all that resource, and actually put it in a path that is constructive, that says we're going to get kids education, we're going to get workers health care, we're going to move this state forward instead of this dismantling nonsense that he keeps pushing us towards.
Well, that's that austerity. You know, you have to cut, 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 reduce, 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 no spend, no spend. I understand that. We've done that for 6 years. It's time to invest in Pennsylvania. You know, I was speaking at another affair, and I said to the people that were in the place, if we continue to run this government in this austerity plan, and they're doing the same thing on the nation, they're suppressing our progress on a national basis as well. I said, think about it from the standpoint of your house. You can't buy your house unless you have enough to buy it. None of us would have our house.
Yep.
None of us would have our houses.
Yep.
There's good investment and there's bad investment. There's plenty of good investment in Pennsylvania. It's time to invest back in our state, believe in what we have here, use our resources appropriately, tax where it needs to be taxed, and help the people, you know, come out of this depression here.
Bang,
we
right
can
there.
Move Pennsylvania a lot further than we are. And he has not utilized the resources that we have in order to do that.
And that's why in November we need a change. Any day, Pashinsky, I appreciate you taking time for us. Always great talking with you.
My pleasure, Rick. Keep up the good work. Thank you to your listeners as well.
Thanks so much, Eddie. Let's take a quick break. Right back, 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get The Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can, and we will, rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
In this wicked world of woe, there are hucksters, flimflammers, plain old crooks, and Republican members of the California Assembly. This last bunch of scoundrels went out of their way to monkey wrench the rollout of President Obama's new health care law. Obama's own computer geniuses were making a hash of the initial rollout in October, but the sign-up was finally smoothing out, and with any Obama success, GOP lawmakers automatically start tossing monkey wrenches. This time, the tool they tossed is a fake website created by the California Republican legislators in August to look like the state's official health care exchange site, where people can sign up to get coverage under the Affordable Care Act. When things finally got worked out on the National Health Care Exchange in November, the Republicans mailed a pamphlet to their constituents directing them to the decoy site, calling it a resource guide to help them navigate the ACA sign-up process. Far from help, however, the faux site is a trap. It's filled with boilerplate Republican propaganda against the law, gimmicks to discourage viewers from even applying for the health care they need, and a rash of distortions and outright lies. There's so much bunkum on the site that its fine print includes a disclaimer saying they don't vouch for, quote, the quality, content, accuracy, or completeness of the information it provides. The silliest thing about the lawmakers' blatant political ploy is that even if it convinces some people to forego the ACA's benefits, who does that hurt? Not Obama, but their own constituents. I know there's no IQ requirement to be a state legislator, but what were they thinking? This is Jim Hightower saying, we can have a good laugh at their low comedy and nincompoopery, but if you're a California taxpayer, congratulations, you paid for the GOP's bogus website and mailings. So much for that party's opposition to wasteful spending.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at HightowerLowdown.org.
The proud defender of the American dream, Rick Smith.
One 888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website, TheRickSmithShow.com. Interested in your thoughts, questions, comments, something on the budget. What did you hear? Is this the direction we should be going here in the Commonwealth? Is this what we should be pursuing? A mild, very, very modest increase in education spending at a time when we have, over the past 3 years, gutted $3 billion. And I had someone come up to me today and go, you know, Rick, I heard you say that. And, you know, the governor said that it was stimulus money. And, yeah, there was stimulus money that came into the state. And the priority that the last governor had was to invest that in the future of our Commonwealth, was to invest the money that we had wisely. What we now have is a governor who decides that we have, look, our budget's pretty big. We got a pretty good-sized budget. You're talking billions of dollars. It goes into the priorities of how you're going to invest that, which is why I always say, you know, the budgets talk about, it really is a look inside your soul. It looks at the priorities that you hold dear as a human being. Do we reach that hand out to help least among us? Do we look to the future to invest in tomorrow? Do we forego the consumption of right now, the carpe diem, hooray for me, screw everybody else mentality, and think towards the future, be it education funding, be it infrastructure funding, be it investing in new startup companies instead of just, well, stealing from somebody else? Because that's what our economic development plans have been. It's this, well, let's beggar thy neighbor. Let's go after and steal from them. And then, of course, they're going to want to steal it back, so you're going to have this volleying back and forth, which corporate America is thrilled with. Why? Fattens their bottom lines. And wouldn't you be as well? I mean, look, if you had, it's like anything. I remember when I sold my house. And I was just telling this story the other day. I sold my house at the top of the market. I sold it and when I lived in Allentown to move to Carlisle, I sold it in 2004. And we had listed it at, if I remember right, it was like 170 for the house. We ended up selling it for, I think it was 199 that we ended up selling it for. Because, you know, we had like three people who were bidding for it. Am I going to turn that down? No. Nobody would. No sane, rational person would. This is what we're doing on the state level. We've got states that are outbidding each other in the hopes that bringing those jobs is going to help their economy. Well, what we found out is it isn't helping. It's actually making things considerably worse. So when you see the money going out of education and going towards the cracker or going towards these economic development schemes, you've got to go, these are the priorities. And again, you know, Sarah sent me an email during the break reminding me of a YouTube video I had done 3 years ago when the governor had done his first speech. And, you know, I went back and I watched it, and it was one of those things that was kind of eerie. We're going, wow, I was right. I was spot on right. Because it doesn't take a genius to figure this out. When you look at the priorities that the Republican Party has told us, I mean, if anything, they're honest. They told us, we're going to cut social spending. We're going to cut. We're going to cut to the bone, austerity at all costs, and you're going to pay for it. It should infuriate us. And I'm hoping that it does. I got to take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Puppeteers. 3 years ago, the Koch brothers and cohorts came around, and they started throwing money at these golden diaper crowds.
Would you dive 14 deep in the Susquehanna to keep a bridge safe? Would you spend night after night with prisoners to keep your community safe? Would you spend Christmas Eve plowing snow to keep roads safe? AFSCME members do. Men and women who choose to serve in public service. Mine inspectors. There's 911 dispatchers, healthcare workers, parole agents. You may not think about them, but no, they're all thinking about you. This message brought to you by AFSCME Council 13.
This is the Media Matters Minute. I'm Samantha Wyatt. In a Change.org petition, high school student Jewel Moore asked Disney to consider a plus-size princess character, saying it would help girls who feel ugly for not fitting the skinny standard. Fox and Friends invited Emmy, a plus-size supermodel, and Mimi Roth, a self-described obesity expert, on to discuss the petition.
Beauty within our children's movie and entertainment industry is askew to the thinner side.
Oh, please. Katniss is fit, Mulan was fit, Pocahontas was
fit. There's a few representations outside of
So you want them to be plus size? You want them to be overweight? sounds like mob mentality. No, I'm not missing any of
what I'm saying.
It's unhealthy. If you like cancer and diabetes, if you want fertility problems, then plus size is beautiful.
It is important to note that plus size does not mean obese. Plus Model Magazine reports that plus size models are on average between the sizes of 6 and 14. For more on this and other stories, please visit MediaMatters.org.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425. Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.
We need to stand united, undivided, we shall never fall. Remember all, we need to trust in and then forever call our brothers and our sisters. And are you and I the win? You and I both know that we can rely on it. The time is prime, fetters aligned, and no mistaking. For union resurrection, the anger has awakened a sleeping giant. Come on, yeah, we can do it. We need to revive, re-amp, and re-up the labor movement.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, therickssmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, email me, rick at therickssmithshow.com. So, last night I went home. I sat down, decided to do the C-SPAN thing again. Big fan of C-SPAN. Because you get to see the idiocy right up front. And I sat down, and what was on last night is the hearing on the IRS. And the IRS is going after conservative groups. And it was kind of a kangaroo court. You had all these conservatives who they brought in there, the woman that I kind of chuckled at was this True the Vote woman, who, I gotta be honest, I wish the Democrats had the forethought and the thinking to bring in groups who are, just marginalized and not all that powerful. I mean, they've caused a couple. This True the Vote group has caused some problems in a couple of areas, but by the Republicans bringing this woman and this group to a congressional hearing to say, look, the Democrats are persecuting this woman from a fundraising perspective. Holy moly, mother of who knows? I mean, this hearing that they spent. Our tax dollars holding this court, this kangaroo court that they're holding with our tax dollars. What a fundraising platform that these conservative groups have got. I mean, you've got all of these white right-wing groups who really now have scored some undeserved street cred. The reality, folks, and I've heard this, the IRS, they went after conservative groups. You know what you didn't hear? They went after a lot of liberal groups, too. They went after all of the groups. And I go back on this, and I guess the first thing that I want, and I'm hoping somebody on the Democratic side grows a set of stones and says, maybe we should be investigating Daryl Issa. Maybe we should be investigating the Republicans who have wasted millions of dollars of tax dollars investigating the IRS. It's like, well, it's a scandal. That's not it. They were looking at all groups. The difference was, and this is where I keep telling people, we need to have a more honest media. We need to have a more balanced media. Because the only voices we heard are the right wing screaming, oh, they're persecuting us. Now, my position has been very clear from the beginning on the whole thing. If I'm the head of the IRS, if I'm the new guy, if I'm this John Koskinen, if I'm him, I say no more. I push for no more tax exempt status for any of these groups. Bottom line, in fact, I'm anti-tax exempt anything. If you're using your money to do what you're supposed to be doing, charitable organizations should not be working for a profit. Shouldn't be doing that. Should be using the money to do whatever the charitable work is, right? So at the end of the year, if you don't have profits, you don't pay any taxes. Duh! Seems pretty logical to me. But if you're sitting on tons of cash, just a thought. Maybe we should be looking at you. Now, I don't think I should be a tax haven either. Because when you get this tax-exempt status, all of the people who donate to these groups, all of the nonprofit money that goes, all the money that goes into these nonprofits, they get to deduct it. So think about this just really quickly. Be it liberal or conservative, be it insane on either end of the spectrum, you've got people who are donating money in huge amounts. We're talking large amounts of money. Huge, hundreds of millions of dollars are going into these, billions of dollars are going into these things, that the people who are donating it, especially the Koch brothers and their ilk, they get to turn around and write that off. So now they take their money, they go, here, you go and get us more tax breaks, get us deregulation, rig the game for us, and oh, by the way, I get to take a tax deduction before it. Is that right? Is that sane? Is it rational? No. When Karl Rove's group, American Crossroads, said, we're gonna go out and we're doing all this stuff to unseat Obama, and then turn around and say, oh, well, we're a nonprofit, we're a 501c3. It's ridiculous. But they've got us talking in the wrong. Look, they've done a really brilliant job of saying, here's the shiny thing, over here, stupids, when we should really be looking at the honest reality, which is pretty simple. We shouldn't be giving these tax deductions to these wealthy people to fund front groups who attack the democracy and give more power to the very wealthy people who have funded these things. Or am I missing something? I mean, because, you know, maybe it's just that I suffer from a case of critical thinking. But it doesn't seem rational, sane, intelligent, any of those things, that we would allow this consolidation not only of wealth, but also of power. And all of these attacks on workers, all of these attacks on our government, it's all about controlling power. It's all about controlling us. And I'm hoping at some point the Tea Party wakes up and realizes that they've been used as stooges. They've been the useful idiots. They've been the ones dangling on the chains, the puppets that have been laughed at. Now, understand, as I've said in the past, I was there at the beginning. When the whole tea thing started, I'm with you. I'm angry, too. Freaking mad. Hanging from chandeliers mad. But the poison that they're pushing us, that ain't the reason, not the cause. Which is why I think the more we have conversations, the more we expose the insanity that has been our corporate-controlled for-profit media, the more alternatives we have to getting information, the more conversations and honest discussion we have, the better off we're going to be. I'm of the mindset you never take what's spoon-fed to you. I'm of the mindset what's easy, what's handed to you on a platter is generally the thing that's going to kill you. That's simple in my view. Anyway, if you missed any portion of the program, therickSmithShow.com, that's where you go to get our podcast, Stitcher, on the smartphone. I'll take the program on the go. Also, iTunes, you can download the podcast there as well. So many opportunities. You can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. I do answer all emails personally. Quick break, right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Rick Smith. It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. The National Labor Relations Board proposed a new rule this week that would shorten the process for union organizing elections. AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka says it's a step in the right direction. Teamsters President Jim Hoffa says his union supports the new rules. Hoffa says it will help stop companies from abusing the legal process to stall elections and delay the union organizing that workers want. The proposed rule change would require businesses to provide email addresses and phone numbers of employees to give unions fair access to the workers in an election. A similar rule was proposed 2 years ago, and business groups challenged it in court. NLRB Chairman Mark Pierce says the new rule will speed up union organizing elections, getting delays and inefficiencies that hurt both workers and employers. At the United Auto Workers Legislative Conference in Washington this week, Vice President Joe Biden told UAW delegates that right-wing forces are waging long-term, intense, concentrated war on the House of Labor. Biden said unions like the UAW are the only ones keeping the barbarians from the gates. Biden says the right to collective bargaining itself is being attacked, and if unions vanish, Biden said, the middle class evaporates. Biden was hailed by UAW President Bob King as a strong and steadfast friend of the UAW.
I still know how to pronounce the word union. Union. One of our problems is not enough elected officials remember how to pronounce the word union. Everybody talks about workers. I talk about unions. Every other worker, white collar and blue collar, not a union member, has figured out the reason they had benefits in the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, and the 90s was because of organized labor.
Roughly 600 workers at five nursing homes in Connecticut operated by HealthBridge have had pay cuts imposed on them by a bankruptcy court. The cuts will average about $30 a week. HealthBridge runs five union nursing homes and three non-union nursing homes in Connecticut. In 2012, worker pensions were eliminated, and their health care costs were increased. SEIU Local 1199 is fighting to protect the livelihoods of the workers, and HealthBridge is accused under federal law of alleged union busting.
Fear, intimidation, even racism is part of that plan every day. We go through a lot of that. Put fear on the workers, we can control them. But they don't never give us a fair chance to say, you know, why we need a union. We need a voice at this plant. And the intimidation and the fear, it really needs to stop.
Keep these worker and union voices on the air by supporting Workers Independent News. Donate now at laborradio.org. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
There are many employers that say, you know, we're looking for people, but we can't find anybody that has passed the drug test, a lot of them. And that's a concern for me because we're having a serious problem with that.
Go, go. I messed up my entire life because I got high. Go. I lost my kids in white because I got high.
Say what?
Now I'm sleeping on the sidewalk and I know why.
Why, man?
Yeah, because I got high. Because I got high.
Well, at least that's what our governor would have you believe. That's what Tom Corbett would have you think. That, you know, all the folks who lost their jobs, especially, you know, the ones who lost their jobs because of the Great Recession and all of the bad policies that the austerity party has brought us, that somehow it's their fault. That somehow it's, if you remember in 2010, our governor came out and said, well, people are just lazy. Oh, they're just fat and happy sitting on that wonderful golden goose known as unemployment. And then it turned... they're all drug addicts. They can't pass a drug test, which was the other reason. Not that their policies are horrible. Not that austerity. Not that the 20,000 education professionals that he kicked to the curb because he cut $1 billion from public education each and every year he was in office. No, that had nothing to do with it. It was just because, you know, they're lazy. Didn't you know? And then you bring that to the U.S. House of Representatives. Or you have Texas Republican Pete Sessions, who on Tuesday had a gem saying that, in his opinion, it's immoral. It is immoral for the country to extend long-term unemployment benefits to people. Moral. I guess that's right up there with the South Carolina representative who said that. Well, you know, if you mama told me you give dogs food, they'll reproduce. Yeah. We live in most certainly... scary, scary times, which is why, you know, sane, rational people need to come to the forefront. We need to be talking to people. You know, I love the governor. I love the hysterics. I love all of that, but he's wrong. But we need to be talking to people, and people need to be coming forward to tell their stories, which is why I'm glad that we've got Lynn Richards with us. She is a woman who lost her job back in April of 2013. And it's a tough go. And now, thanks to our Republican friends in Congress, on December 28th, extended unemployment benefits gone. what's going on from there. That's why I've asked Lynn Richards to come talk with us. Lynn, thanks for taking time for us.
Not a problem. Happy to be here.
So, you know, you hear our governor, and it's not just our governor. It's many politicians across this country who have this view of people who have been unemployed for an extended period of time that they're lazy or they're stupid or they're drug addicts. How does that make you feel?
Pretty angry, to be honest.
As it should. I mean, this is why I've been saying for the longest time, all the folks who have been unemployed, the some 1.7 million right now who have been kicked to the curb because the Republicans refuse to do anything, they should be in the streets. They should be out screaming and carrying on, saying, look, we're not drug addicts, or we're not lazy. It's your policies that have done this.
Absolutely.
So tell me the story. I've talked to so many unemployed folks over the last couple of years, and every story is heartbreaking and it's hard to hear. But look, there's got to be folks like you who are willing to come out and tell the stories, because there's so many folks out there who can't. And I understand you lost your job in April of 2013. What happened?
Well, I was let go from my position. I was no longer needed. I've been looking, obviously, since then. I'm used to working two jobs, part-time and then my full-time, and going to school. So not having a full-time job to go to every day has been really hard for me. So obviously I've been looking. I've applied at hundreds and hundreds of places. You just don't get callbacks, and it's very frustrating.
And I would have to guess that the longer you're unemployed, the longer this period goes on, the fewer callbacks and the fewer responses you get from folks, because what I've been hearing from people, and maybe you can attest to this, is that, you know, once you get past that 3-4-6 month period, employers start going, well, if nobody else wanted you, neither do I.
Right. They assume there's a negative reason why you haven't been picked up yet.
Yeah, I mean, I talked to a woman the other day who, you know, she got a bachelor's degree in physics and, you know, just all of these wonderful credentials and an extremely articulate and bright woman. She can't find a job doing anything.
I believe it. I used some of my time being unemployed to continue my education. I got a degree, and it still has not helped, and that's been since August, so.
And now you're saddled with the debt from trying to go. And I love this argument. You go invest in yourself, and you go get a degree. You go you go do this thinking that, hey, at the end of the road, I'm going to be able to get a job. And the sad reality is, in this economy, because of, I would argue, our trade policies, our austerity policies, and a number of other things, what's going on is the economy's contracted. And you've got three people out there looking and fighting and scrapping for every one job that's available.
That's totally right.
So, you know, as I look at this, the fact that you had, well, we as a nation had our elected leaders go home for Christmas and leave 1.7 million people out in the cold, and eventually down the road, at the end of the year, you're talking upwards of 4 million people if nothing gets done. The fact that those folks went home for Christmas tells me that every one of them should be out in the cold.
They definitely don't see this as a reality that's affecting them. So why does it, you know, it doesn't affect them. So what do they care? So,
I mean, you know, look at Pete Sessions, who has said that it's immoral. Can you imagine? I never thought in my lifetime that I would hear someone, a politician, say that it was immoral to extend a helping hand to someone. Immoral. Speechless.
Yeah, that's not my view. That's not my view of morality, but.
But these are the people that we've elected, and that's the sad reality of our times. Tell me, since you lost your job, how, you know, what have things been like for you and your family? What kind of obstacles have you had?
Well, it's been rough trying to juggle bills. Had to take out a loan on my 401k to try to just make it through this month. At the end of this month, I'm not sure how I'm going to pay my bills for next month. I won't be able to.
So what I'm gathering is it's not the golden egg. It's not the golden parachute. It's not the life of luxury and leisure, as I've been led to believe by a number of folks who keep saying that, well, people don't want to work because they've got it too good on unemployment.
No, not the case. I would love to be at work every day. It's like, could find a job, I'd start tomorrow.
And that's the story I hear from too many people, that, you know, if there was a job out there And this is where I have to say that our elected officials need to be looking towards full employment policies. If the private sector is not going to do it, it's my view, and I'm curious your thoughts, if you like the idea of, I think government should be the employer of last resort. I think things have been so bad since the Bush recession in 2007, 2008, that there's got to be something to kickstart the economy and get people like you back into the workforce so that your skills don't erode, so that you're back and competing in the workforce and then moving into the private sector with a little competition as well.
I agree. I think the senators that are calling, you know, people that take unemployment immoral or lazy, I'd be more than happy to do anything for them in the office. I'm very skilled there.
That's not a bad idea. We should call Pete Sessions and see if he's hiring.
There you go.
Because, you know, the sad reality is you hear all of this vitriol and all of this talk, but the sad reality is there are people like you, very real people that I've met day in and day out, who are struggling in this country because of their policies. And it's not just talking points. To me, it's not just, you know, it's not just ways to score political points. These are very real people's lives. And, you know, I wonder, you know, here in the coming weeks and months, if you're unable to find a job and our representatives don't extend this helping hand, what happens to your family? What happens to your home? What happens down the road?
Definitely looking at losing the house. Losing my cars, a very scary thing to think about.
I mean, it's horrible. And I give you credit, Lynn. Look, there are very few people, you know, I've met a number of people over the years who I've said, you know, you really need to be speaking out. So I give you the utmost credit for being brave enough to come forth and say, hey, you know, this is my life. This is what's going on. And it's wrong. Because I believe it's wrong.
Absolutely, and I'm not even the worst off out of, you know, everyone that's lost the benefits, but if I can help in any way, I would love to.
So as you were looking at this, and now I understand that there's a push right now, Senator Jack Reed and Dean Heller, the Republican from Nevada, they've put forth this idea of a three-month extension. Now, you know, here we're almost a month and a half into this. By the time they actually pass it, the 3 months will be, have passed, and we'll be right back where we began. But what would that 3 months mean to you and your family?
Well, it would give me a little bit more time to try to find a position. It would definitely help pay bills for those 3 months.
So you're not going to take that money and invest it in the Cayman Islands and go on a trip to Hawaii or the Bermuda, right?
Absolutely. I don't have time for a vacation with my job going on hardcore, so no.
But that's the other thing that we hear, that, you know, these benefits are so wonderful and so all-encompassing that, you know, people are actually spending money going on vacation.
Absolutely not.
So, to me, extending the unemployment, the federal unemployment extension is a smart thing, solely for the reason is that you're putting money back into the economy. So let me ask you, you know, when I say the vacation in the Cayman Islands facetiously. I understand that, you know, when these unemployment benefits, as soon as they come in, they're going right out, and they're going into the local economy. You're spending money in town, the grocery store, paying your rent, all of that stuff, right?
Yes, absolutely.
And, you know, to me, once you pull that money out of the economy, once you put people like you and other unemployed folks money in their pocket, what happens to the local economy? Don't we actually make things worse?
I believe so. I know my husband, my family, and I, we are not going out to dinner anymore. We're not going to the movies. We're not, you know, trying to waste gas. It's very much homebody trying to save, you know, every penny we can.
You know, here in Pennsylvania right now, 73,330 families, workers without unemployment benefits. You're talking about some $25 million out of the Pennsylvania economy. You know, the average, and people love to say how generous our unemployment system is. It's about $340 a week, which I don't see as all that generous. By the end of the year, if nothing gets done, we're talking over a quarter of a million people in our state without unemployment benefits. And then you extrapolate that into the big numbers of, you know, you're talking, you know, what, close to $150 million taken out of our economy. That can't be good. So I understand there are things that are being done. There are this push by Jack Reed and them. What should folks like us be doing? What should I be doing to help? I know that in the Senate this bill is. Should we be calling our representatives? What's the push?
Well, definitely that is the big push, is to let your representatives know that this is affecting you, it's affecting other people, it's affecting the economy. I know there's a toll-free number to call and speak with the senator in your state and let them know to please go ahead and pass the vote on Thursday, I believe, is when they're voting on it in the Senate. So that's the first step as of right now.
And make sure that you call 1-877-363-6141. That's going to help you get to your senator and tell them, hey, you know, we need to be extending this. He'll call, he'll give you a zip code, and they'll send you right to Toomey's office. Casey, I understand, is already on board. Toomey is the target here in Pennsylvania. As in Illinois, Mark Kirk is the target there to make sure that this unemployment gets extended. You know, last line of questioning I've got for you, in looking at this, did you ever think that you would be in this position? I mean, I've talked to so many people who, you know, they've worked hard their whole lives and never saw it coming. I mean, the woman I talked to the other night, she said, I never saw it coming. She was going through cancer treatments, and, you know, she was still going into work every day and busting her behind, and it came out of the blue. So did you ever think this could happen to you?
Absolutely not. I've never, ever been unemployed this long. This is my first time on unemployment, and it's been a hassle, and it's been disappointing, and I can't believe that I have been laid off since April. It's just amazing to me.
So what do you say to the people? Because, you know, I've encountered a number of folks who say, well, if it was me, I'd go out and I'd get a job tomorrow because I'm wonderful. You know, and I know a lot of people have that bloated self-image. What do you say to those people?
It's nonsense. It just depends on if people are hiring or not. I've had to expand my field, you know, my search for different positions that I've never even done before, just hoping that maybe they'd give someone a chance. And it still hasn't turned up anything.
No, I mean, even jobs that are, you know, that, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 years ago you'd have never thought of taking, they won't even take you. In fact, you know, I've talked to a number of people say, you know, I've tried to get jobs at, you know, the big box retailers or fast food places. They won't hire you because, look, they know you're going to leave when something else comes along.
Right. You're overqualified.
Yeah. So I can't imagine you. I'm sure you hear that often. Because right now, the way things are, the economy is in such a shape that employers have the pick of the litter. And, you know, they're going to. They're going to get exactly what they want, and if not, we can always import people from somewhere else.
It's frustrating.
I feel for you. Lynn, I appreciate you taking time for us. I appreciate you sharing your story, because I understand with this it can be depressing. I've been unemployed a couple of times in my life. The isolation, all of that stuff can be depressing, but I'm glad you came and talked to us so other people out in our listening area, they know they're not alone.
Well, I appreciate you listening to my story. Thank you very much.
I appreciate it. Lynn, thank you so much. Let's take a quick break. Back with your thoughts. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show. We're working people from the talk.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
This is the Media Matters Minute. I'm Samantha Wyatt. In a Change.org petition, high school student Jewel Moore asked Disney to consider a plus-size princess character, saying it would help girls who feel ugly for not fitting the skinny standard. Fox and Friends invited Emmy, a plus-size supermodel, and Mimi Ross, a self-described obesity expert, on to discuss the petition.
Beauty within our children's movie and entertainment industry is askew to the thinner side.
Oh, please. Katniss is fit. Mulan was fit. Pocahontas was
fit. Those are a few. Pocahontas? there is a few representations outside of
so
a
So you
whole
want them
array
to be plus size? You want them to be overweight? This sounds like mob mentality. No, I'm not
misunderstanding what I'm saying.
It's unhealthy. If you like cancer and diabetes, if you want fertility problems, then plus size is beautiful.
It is important to note that plus size does not mean obese. Plus Model Magazine reports that plus size models are on average between the sizes of 6 and 14. For more on this and other stories, please visit MediaMatters.org.
There are many employers that say, you know, we're looking for people, but we can't find anybody that has passed the drug test, a lot of them. And that's a concern for me because we're having a serious problem with that.
Go, go, go. I messed up my entire life go, because I got high. Go, go, go. I lost my kids and wife because I got high.
Say what?
Now I'm sleeping on the sidewalk and I know why.
Why, man?
Yeah, because I got high. Because I got high. Because I got high.
You know, that's kind of what the frame is, isn't it? First it was when Governor Corbett was running for governor, it was they're lazy. There's jobs out there, just too lazy to get them. And now it's, well, you know, now they're drug addicts. Sad stuff. Now, the thing that gets me is that here's a guy who's done everything he could possibly do to destroy that benefit. And the frame, you know, yesterday we got an email from Brian saying, well, it's, you know, giving out all these goodies, why would anybody want to go back to work? What they've done to unemployment in this Commonwealth, I don't think many people know yet. They have frozen the benefit for the next decade. So it's going to be eroded by inflation. They have made it so that if you work in construction, if you do seasonal work, you're going to be excluded from it. Really, you know, as I've been saying, this was a bad idea when Scott Perry put it forth in House Bill 960. It was a bad idea when Governor Corbett signed it, but it was what it was. And to take you back for a second, Governor Corbett, at the time of signing it, said this about it.
We just did a huge bond for the unemployment compensation. You know, as you know, I think our debt to the federal government for unemployment compensation was over $4 billion, 4.2? Oh, okay, 3.3. We went out and bonded that. We basically refinanced the mortgage, reduced the cost, paid off the federal government, reduced our costs considerably, saved employers hundreds of millions of dollars. We have done that.
Yeah, we've done that. And, you know, the thing that gets me is, did you hear what he said? We saved employers hundreds of millions of dollars. What about the workers? They cut their benefits. And, you know, Gene Barr, the head of the Chamber of Commerce in Pennsylvania, about that piece of legislation, again, echoing the, hey, we saved employers money.
The matter, I want to recognize the signing into law of a comprehensive unemployment compensation reform bill that will balance the trust fund, restore the system to solvency, and save employers hundreds of millions of dollars. This issue is one of our members' top priorities.
That's one of their members' top priorities. But who's looking out for the workers? The workers got screwed in all this. And the employers, they got actually a tax break. That's what's infuriating. Workers got screwed, and the people who underfunded the system from the beginning, they got a tax break. It's insane. I got Tom on line one. How you doing tonight, Tom?
I'm doing good, Rick. Yourself?
I am good. Now, I understand there's a push. You know, I saw this on Facebook, and a number of listeners sent me this Facebook page, Change Act 60 of Pennsylvania's unemployment compensation law, of which you're one of the folks who comments on there.
Yeah. I just got on to Facebook because it's affecting me, funny. Well, highest quarter in the next four quarters. Now they raised it to 49.5%. And besides that, for you to get 18 weeks unemployment, you have to have 18 weeks of contributions, 26 weeks of unemployment, you have to have 26 weeks of contribution.
So even if you're making the brunt of your money in the summer months when most construction building trades people make their money, and you're paying in on every dollar that you earn into the unemployment system, you're still precluded from getting anything out of it just because of the calculus, even though you make $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 a year in a couple of months?
Well, Yes. What will hurt you the most is if you have a high quarter. Say you make $30,000 in one quarter. That means you need to make $15,000 up in the next four quarters. So if you're laid off for two quarters, that means you need to make up $15,000 in two quarters. So if you worked a lot of overtime in that high quarter and only worked 40 hours, a normal 40-hour week, in the other two quarters, you don't qualify.
So what does that mean for folks like you and the guys you work with? I mean, I look at this, and you've got to ask the question, was this something that was deliberately put in place as a penalty to workers? Was this something that was forethought? I'm told from people who, from lobbyists who lobbied on this, that this was the Republican payback to the building trades, to the people who built our Commonwealth.
Well, I don't see where they can come up with that. To me, I think it was basically a, like you said, a tax break for the business owners so they don't have to pay in towards unemployment.
No, we did that already, though, Tom. I mean, the reality is, understand how the system was set up. The employer would pay, and as an employer, I've done it, you would pay an unemployment compensation premium on up to $8,000. Basically what it was back in the 90s, what was the median income back then, they were paying on today. So they underfunded the whole system massively. So this fix that they came up with, because the fund ran a huge deficit because of the Great Recession, the fix was not to raise that $8,000 way, way up to $10,000 and cut the rate in half. So effectively what they did is they gave employers a huge tax break and gave the taxpayers the bill to fund the unfunded part of it. And the thing that gets me is, and this is where I'm going to go off on my little tangent, this was specifically designed to exclude people like you and all working people from that asset. They sat down and figured out how can we get people to not be eligible? And that's how they rigged this game up, Tom.
Well, I agree with you. We fought against it, but... the thing of it is, I don't think the people of Pennsylvania saw it coming. They didn't understand it because the guys I worked with, they didn't quite even understand it until they went to file for unemployment.
Well, the thing is, Tom, you know, the reality, Tom, is on this program, we actually interviewed the guy who put it forth. When Scott Perry was a state representative before he became a congressman, he proposed this poison, and he was pushing for this poison, and he knew it was poison, but he knew the business community, as Gene Barr, the clip you heard, said, this was their number one priority. This is what the Chamber of Commerce wanted, and their guy, Scott Perry, is the guy who pushed it for him.
Well, that's a shame. I mean, it's amazing how... business or politicians want to take away from the working class. I mean, how much more can we possibly give?
Well,
we're going to get to a point where we're going to wind up no longer in a recession, but a depression. I mean, I talk to guys that they're actually having to sell stuff because they can't open up an unemployment claim. They've worked hard all their lives for something. Now they're having to give it up. Due to the fact this new unemployment regulation.
Yeah, you go back to the high school physics class or high school civics class, Tom. And the reality is government. You learned on day one, government decides who gets what, and the people who are now controlling the levers of power are deciding that the people who screwed up the system by underfunding it, the employer class, they're the ones who deserve the spoil. So and I go back and I can't highlight this enough, Tom. That when they pushed this poison through, they actually gave a massive tax break to the people who underfunded it from the beginning. And you and me and every other working person in this state got saddled with, as the governor said, a $3.5 billion bond so that we could pay the federal government back for the underfunded unemployment compensation fund.
Well, they should be looking at different ways of, cutting their budget and expenditures instead of taking away from the working class, as far as the state government, even the federal government. I mean,
that's a whole argument for another day. I'm talking about the pure fact that you've got this unemployment compensation system that you as a worker pay in on every dollar you make. You pay a percentage of your paycheck every single week, week after week after week. And the employers pay on a small, a much small, it was 8,000. It's now the first 10,000. So if I make $100,000 a year, they pay on the first 10,000. Yet I pay on every dime. It just seems like there's a simple fairness component here and then a basic economic component here. The fact that we've given this huge tax break and saddled taxpayers with the responsibility that it's that the employers should be the ones paying for.
Right. The way I see it, Corbett feels if he could, they would do away with unemployment totally. I've read different articles.
Sure.
Statements that have been made in that regard, which is totally ridiculous.
But that's the conservative ideology, Tom. You know, my football team, when I was, all my life, I followed the Broncos. And, the guy who was the great quarterback from the Broncos just said the other day, he doesn't believe in safety nets. That's the Republican Party position. They don't believe in safety nets. They don't believe in unemployment, Social Security. They don't believe in food stamps. They don't believe in any of that stuff that saved us from a Great Depression instead of the Bush recession.
Right. Well, that came from all your Democrats as far as your unemployment and as far as welfare, too.
And those are, in my view, are good things, Tom. It did what it was supposed to do. It saved us from a massive depression and extreme pain in this country.
Oh, I agree 100%. I mean, because it's the working people that support the economy, as far as I'm concerned.
So let me ask you this. You can't open up a claim. You're basically without a dime. How do you then participate in the economy? If you don't have money to spend on sugar and shoes or rent and electricity, what do you then do? Are you borrowing from retirement? Are you out on the street with a sign? What?
Well, that's what you have to do. And people have cashed in their 401ks that they've had for their retirement, which isn't any good. And then I know guys that had to cash in their annuity so they could pay for their mortgage. So it's a lose-lose situation for them.
So let's get back to the Facebook page for a second. The Facebook page, of course, you can check it out. Change Act 60 of Pennsylvania's unemployment compensation law. We'll get a link at thericksmithshow.com so people can take a look at it. What's the change? What are you looking for? What are the suggestions? What are the ideas? A scrap? What Scott Perry and Corbett have done, go back to the way it was. What's the idea?
I say take it back to the way it was. I mean, the only reason we have so much unemployment is due to the fact that we have no manufacturing base left. I mean, they're saying that we're a service-oriented state or country anymore.
Well, thanks. You can thank Ronald Reagan for that. I mean, that was when I was a kid growing up, Reagan's vision was we're going to get rid of that dirty manufacturing and we'll all have office jobs.
Well, that's insane because I've read articles where there is not enough tech jobs or high-tech jobs available for the population that's looking for work. So now that you did away with manufacturing, all you have is jobs in the service industry like Walmart, restaurants, or as far as home heating service, cleaning carpet. And they all pay between $8 to $10, maybe $12 an hour.
Which you can't live on.
In Williamsport, if you're making $15 an hour, you have a pretty good job. But how is somebody that's making $15 an hour supposed to go out and buy a $25,000 automobile? I mean, it takes two incomes of $15,000 a year to be able to support a family of four. That's roughly $60,000, and they're just getting by.
Yeah.
They're either paying rent or a very small, low mortgage, and they're driving around in a vehicle that's 10, 12, or 15 years old.
And that's not the America that I grew up. But the sad reality is it's not that we've lost our manufacturing base. It's we gave it away. It's we've allowed these huge multinationals to move our manufacturing and our jobs overseas for the cheaper labor, lax environmental standards. And then we have trade policy. I don't know if you saw the trade numbers, but last year with China alone, we had a $318.4 billion trade deficit. If we had that kind of consumption here, that kind of production here to consume those products, we'd be flush with jobs.
Sure. And, you know, not everybody is cut out to go to college, and not everybody wants to be in an office. I mean, you have tradesmen, you have farmers, you have service-oriented people. I mean, I remember as a kid, my dad would go to Sears and Roebuck, and he would talk to his the salesman that sold appliances. Now, this man raised family, two kids, and his wife stayed at home, and he retired from Sears with a pension. And that today is impossible.
Yeah.
I mean, J.C. Penney did away with all their full-time employees. They all cut them back from 40 hours so they don't have to pay the benefits. Where does it end?
It's this idea of business friendly. We got to do whatever the corporations want. And, you know, I look at these trade policies, and to me, all of this stems from our trade policies. All of our problems emanate from our insane trade policies where we are giving our wealth away for the benefit of semi-cheap toasters. And they're not even cheap anymore. They're just cheaply made. But, you know, last question I've got for you, since I've got you on the line. There's a push right now by the Republicans here in Harrisburg to push this House Bill 1507 and Senate Bill 1034, which they're euphemistically calling paycheck protection, which would make it illegal for the state and their public sector workers to bargain over a dues checkoff. I'm curious, as a private sector worker, what do you think of that?
Well, you say as far as dues, you mean as far as belonging to a union?
I mean, to me, this is the first step in taking all of the money out of the public sector unions to basically push us towards right to work. And I don't know if you've heard of 1507 and 1034, but they're euphemistically calling it paycheck protection by making it illegal for the employer of the state as an employer to bargain with their workers. Does that seem right to you?
Well, no,
yeah.
No. And as far as a right to work state, it's absolutely absurd. I mean, for somebody not to be able to join a union but be able to collect all the benefits, that's not right.
Yeah.
And, what's going to happen if we become a right to work state? Everybody's going to be making $10 to $15 an hour,
or 8 to 10,
just like the trend. Yeah, they're trying to do away with prevailing wage. And you have to understand, prevailing wage was never set by the union. It was enacted in 1914 by the state of Pennsylvania due to the fact that out-of-state workers were coming in working cheaper than what the employers were paying. And the state says, look, you're ruining our economy. You need to pay this prevailing wage. So it was set by the state government, not by the union.
Absolutely, and I think more people need to hear that, Tom, which is why I'm glad you said it. I appreciate the time. Thanks so much. Please get back with me again.
Sure. Thank you, Rick.
Thanks so much, Tom. Let's take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Controversial, thought-provoking, opinionated. Rick Smith.
In this wicked world of woe, there are hucksters, flimflammers, plain old crooks, and Republican members of the California Assembly. This last bunch of scoundrels went out of their way to monkey wrench the rollout of President Obama's new health care law. Obama's own computer geniuses were making a hash of the initial rollout in October, but the sign-up was finally smoothing out, and with any Obama success, GOP lawmakers automatically start tossing monkey wrenches. This time, the tool they tossed is a fake website, created by the California Republican legislators in August to look like the state's official health care exchange site, where people can sign up to get coverage under the Affordable Care Act. When things finally got worked out on the National Health Care Exchange in November, the Republicans mailed a pamphlet to their constituents directing them to the decoy site, calling it a resource guide to help them navigate the ACA sign-up process. Far from help, however, the faux site is a trap. It's filled with boilerplate Republican propaganda against the law, gimmicks to discourage viewers from even applying for the health care they need, and a rash of distortions and outright lies. There's so much bunkum on the site that its fine print includes a disclaimer saying they don't vouch for, quote, the quality, content, accuracy, or completeness of the information it provides. The silliest thing about the lawmakers' blatant political ploy is that even if it convinces some people to forego the ACA's benefits, who does that hurt? Not Obama, but their own constituents. I know there's no IQ requirement to be a state legislator, but what were they thinking? This is Jim Hightower saying, we can have a good laugh at their low comedy and nincompoopery, but if you're a California taxpayer, congratulations! You paid for the GOP's bogus website and mailings. So much for that party's opposition to wasteful spending. Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at HightowerLowdown.org. Look out! The kleptocrat gang is loose on the land. Unlike thieves of old, this gang is not out to rob bags of cash from banks and...
Just when you thought it was safe, those crazy Republicans are at it again. It's time for the Rick Smith Show's conservative alerts.
Well, you know, even at, you know, they still shock me. I mean, on Tuesday when Pete Sessions came out and said, you know, it's immoral that we even consider extending unemployment benefits to people who have been out of work for more than 26 weeks, I just stopped at my place. Immoral? There are a lot of things that are immoral. Making sure that people can put food on the table, not one of them. Now, you want to talk about immoral? You want to talk about what is truly immoral? Is giving huge tax breaks to multinational corporations who send jobs overseas at a time when we're cutting food stamp benefits, literally taking food out of the mouths of children. You want to talk about immoral? That, my friends, a good place to start. Well, it is Friday, and it's time for our regular segment with our good friends over at the Campaign for America's Future. It is our Future Friday. I've got Terrence Heath on the line. He is the Campaign for America's Future online producer of OurFuture.org. Terrence, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So it's immoral. Immoral. The word I can't get that out of my head. It is immoral to extend unemployment benefits.
Yes, we have gone through the looking glass. It is now immoral to help people who are in desperate need. It's now immoral to give food assistance to families and children. But somehow it's not immoral to continue giving subsidies to wealthy farming corporations.
Stop, stop, no, stop, Terrence, stop.
Several members of Congress.
Stop, it's not subsidies. We're not giving subsidies to these companies. We're giving them welfare. This is massive, enormous,
exactly. Thank you.
Unforgivingly
Thank you.
Huge amounts of welfare to the welfare queens,
yes,
who we can point to. We know who they are, unlike during,
yes,
the 80s and 90s when they kept making up,
yes,
this imaginary welfare queen. We know who these people are.
You're absolutely right. And to me, that's immoral. There are families in this country who are literally going to have to take food out of their children's mouths, literally going to have to decide whether to eat or pay bills. There are families in this country that are literally going to have nowhere to turn because this Congress, and I should say the Republican House, has determined that Americans in this recession haven't suffered enough.
Yep. Well, and look, in the Republican Senate, because when the unemployment extension, the very limited 3-month paid for unemployment extension benefit went down because of another Republican filibuster. You have to point fingers at where the finger needs to be pointed. And all of Absolutely. Your fingers, not just one of them, all 4 fingers and your thumb. We know where it all gets pointed, and it's at the Republicans.
Absolutely. And the rhetoric that you hear, of course, is the same that you always hear. Well, these people are just too lazy to go out and look for a job, and just giving them unemployment benefits is keeping them from going out and looking for work at a time when there are at least 3 unemployed people competing for every job opening in this country. And that's not counting the people who have been out of work for so long that they've given up.
Yeah, or as our governor here in Pennsylvania said, and it's one of my favorite clips.
There are many employers that say, you know, we're looking for people, but we that has passed the drug test, a lot of them.
Just can't pass the drug test, Terrence, and drug addicts.
I know, but maybe we should test members of Congress.
I'm with you.
That does seem to be a problem. And while we're at it, maybe we should have a credit check required for, I don't know, a job like the governor of Virginia.
Yeah. Wow.
To be perfectly honest, I mean, if that's where they want to go, then let's go all the way there.
And what's
take everybody along.
And what's frustrating to me is these are the people who tell me they believe in family values and they care about the children.
There's no family values involved in that. And if you care about children, then you help families put food on the table. You help families keep the heat on in the winter. And instead, we're literally taking food away from people and imagining that they're going to have somewhere else to turn, or that if they're just desperate enough, I don't know what they think people are going to do, what they think is going to happen. But what is going to happen is there are going to be a lot more people going hungry. There are going to be a lot more people perhaps even going homeless.
Isn't that the point, though, Terrence? We want people so desperate that they're going to take crummy jobs with crummy pay, and they're not going to complain. They're just going to be grateful. And I've been saying for years what's happened to the American workforce in this country is that we have for too long suffered from Stockholm syndrome. We are now identifying with the people who have caused us enormous pain, and we're now defending them.
It's part of what I saw when the attack on public employees started, and somehow people were looking at public employees asking, why should they have it so good? Instead of asking, wait a minute, why don't we have it that good?
Yes.
Anymore. We used to. What happened? I can tell you what happened is that private sector unions have lost tons and tons of members, and politicians, especially Republicans on the right, have done everything they can to break unions. So if you have fewer protections, if you have fewer rights in the workplace, if you have fewer benefits and next to no retirement, there's a reason. There's a reason for that because people used to have that and they don't anymore.
Did you see the Pat Buchanan article this week?
I don't think I did, because I'm sure I would have been ranting and raving about it if I had.
No, I mean I got to be honest. It's rare that I'm on the Pat Buchanan bandwagon, and it's rare that, when it comes to trade issues and economic issues, I don't think he's horrible. But he wrote a piece this week where he said how the GOP lost Middle America, and he went into how after World War II the Republican Party had a choice to make. Do they side with we the people, or do they side with corporate America? And through our trade policies, and it's an anti-immigration screed, to be sure, but he said, you know, the Republicans basically handed everything corporate America ever wanted,
right,
to these, to the, to corporate America. And what he points out is he said corporate America was going global and wanted to rid itself of American workforce, the best paid on earth, and replace it with a cheap foreign labor force. He goes into this fact, says these places don't have unions, they don't have environmental regulations, they don't have anything, and we just basically said, here, the baby, the bathwater, go ahead, corporate America, take it. And they the Republicans then gave us was a bunch of nonsense, a bunch of divisive, ridiculous, shiny things to get all worked up about.
And it's to the point now where they tell us you have to do all of these things in order to compete globally. And compete globally, by the way, with countries where the average minimum wage is something like 28 cents a week or a day or something like that. And it's something that I've touted for a long time, ever since I read the shock doctrine, that this is what's been going on, is the underlying message to conservative policy for decades has been to middle-class Americans, you are going to have a lower standard of living, period, and it's permanently, because that's the only way that scheme that you could possibly compete with the labor forces in all these other countries. And they will couch it in a way to make it sound like this is something that just organically happened.
Yeah.
And it's not. Like Nelson Mandela said, poverty is man-made. This is man-made. It's not something that is naturally occurring. This is a situation that has been directly created by policy. Policy supported by people who knew exactly what they were doing at the time
and
exactly what the consequences would be.
And not for the benefit of you or me or anybody that we know, all for the benefit of these huge multinationals. And that's what it comes down to. It's not the mom and pops. It's not your local, you know, hardware store or your local little manufacturer. It's these global corporations.
Right. It's something that I don't think people are starting to get or starting to pick up on and to understand, because you have a majority of Americans now supporting raising the minimum wage. That's something that cuts across economic lines, especially popular with the middle class, because a lot of people see themselves now, I think, as being so close to the edge, and barely holding on by the skin of their teeth, that they see that as, you know, there but for the grace of God goes me, and if I end up in that position, or my son or my daughter ends up in that position.
Well, we're now seeing that poverty could be us. We're now seeing that those people could be us.
Yeah, it's not those people anymore. It's you, after, you know, one paycheck away.
Yep. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with Terrence Heath. He is the online producer of OurFuture.org, the blog and website of the Campaign for America's Future. They're doing a weekly feature, and I love this idea of taking a look at the Wingnut statements. It's Wingnut Week in Review. Terrence, what was the Wingnut statement of the week?
Well, it wasn't a statement so much as it was a reaction. I'm sure you saw the Super Bowl commercial for Coca-Cola.
And as it was playing... As it was playing, I looked to my wife, as I'm sure you did too, I looked to my wife and I go, this is going to be the right-wing issue of the week.
Yep. As soon as I saw it, I said, here we go. And true to form, Twitter lit up with people making idiotic statements. And, of course, the right-wing media lit up with people from Alan West to Glenn Beck making the same statements and not getting what Republicans have had a lot of trouble getting since the 2012 election, that this is America. This is what America looks like. This is what America sounds like. We have many voices. We speak in many accents and many languages. And the idea that America, or what is American, is and can only be defined as one thing, is long since I think past, and I think that it's something that you saw again and again when Miss America was crowned,
right.
And And when Mark Anthony and a young Mexican-American boy at different times sang the national anthem at sporting events, and Twitter lit up with people that were complaining about, well, why could you get an American to sing? Hello, Mark Anthony was born in the Bronx. and it just gets ridiculous after a while, and it particularly makes a joke out of Ryan Priebus, you know, threatening MSNBC for tweeting that, oh, there's going to be another Cheerios ad with the interracial family, and conservatives are probably going to get worked up about that. What exactly did MSNBC tweet that wasn't true?
Exactly.
I mean, who was it that was getting that got all up in arms and bent out of shape the first time that commercial aired?
But you know what? One of the things that caught me, Terrence, you know, and I look at this, and you know, I saw some of the tweeting, and I got the, you know, a lot of boycott the Coke. They're an anti-American company, and all this stuff. And one of the things that I took from it is that I think people really believe that Coke is an American company.
You know something? I'm from Georgia, and I've toured the Coca-Cola Museum in Atlanta, and one of the last places that they take you on that tour is this big tasting room where you can taste all of the products that Coca-Cola manufactures all over the world and sells all over the world to different people in different places, tailored to their particular cultural taste. And if that is an eye opener. That was an eye opener to me. That it's an international company.
Exactly.
They speak to and serve all kinds of different people. And because that's the nature of their business, they have to. They have to reach more than one audience. They can't look at their audience as all being one thing.
So in addition to the people who were in that ad, Terrence, in addition to those folks being the face of America, that's their customer base. And, you know, I was trying to tell someone the other day that Coke probably sells more product outside of the U.S. than they do in, considering we're only about 310 million people. You're talking about a global population of pushing 7 billion people.
Right. Yeah. And it's one of those little things that at one point you would have thought, no, of course people aren't going to get insane and bent out of shape and crazy over this, that you see it happening more and more often now. And I don't let anyone tell you different, that it always comes from the right.
Always.
What's amazing to me is that they then get upset when you point that out.
Yeah, that's the other part of it. What I did find interesting, though, is I saw a bunch of people who said, well, you're in America, speak American. I didn't know American was an actual language.
American is not a language. And guess what? It's not the official language of the United States either.
Yeah, I mean,
we don't have an official language, but it's one of those things that is silly and yet gives you a sense of how far afield things have gone, at least on one side of our political spectrum. The idea that America can and should only be represented one way, by one particular kind of or race of or religious person.
Just amazing stuff to me, Terrence. But I look forward to next week. I can't wait to find the wing nut of the week then. It's beautiful.
Yeah, thank you.
I appreciate you taking time for us. I look forward to hearing what's going on next week. Thanks so much, Terrence.
All right.
Terrence Heath, online producer for the website OurFuture.org. For the good folks over at the Campaign for America's Future. Let's take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people from the talk. They saw the food was everything to man. Complaining in the head of thought, help the poorest folks, but it only brought more money in their hand. And the poorest keep getting poorer, people turn away, not equal to admit the way they plan. Taking all the food away from everything they grew, they can't wonder they don't stand.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. The National Labor Relations Board proposed a new rule this week that would shorten the process for union organizing elections. AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka says it's a step in the right direction. Teamsters President Jim Hoffa says his union supports the new rules. Hoffa says it will help stop companies from abusing the legal process to stall elections and delay the union organizing that workers want. The proposed rule change would require businesses to provide email addresses and phone numbers of employees to give unions fair access to the workers in an election. A similar rule was proposed 2 years ago, and business groups challenged it in court. NLRB Chairman Mark Pierce says the new rule will speed up union organizing elections, getting rid of delays and inefficiencies that hurt both workers and employers. At the United Auto Workers Legislative Conference in Washington this week, Vice President Joe Biden told UAW delegates that right-wing forces are waging long-term, intense, concentrated war on the House of Labor. Biden said unions like the UAW are the only ones keeping the barbarians from the gates. Biden says the right to collective bargaining itself is being attacked, and if unions vanish, Biden said, the middle class evaporates. Biden was hailed by UAW President Bob King as a strong and steadfast friend of the UAW.
I still know how to pronounce the word union. Union. One of our problems is not enough elected officials remember how to pronounce the word union. Everybody talks about workers. I talk about unions. Every other worker, white collar and blue collar, not a union member, has figured out the reason they had benefits in the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, and the 90s was because of organized labor.
Roughly 600 workers at five nursing homes in Connecticut operated by HealthBridge have had pay cuts imposed on them by a bankruptcy court. The cuts will average about $30 a week. HealthBridge runs five union nursing homes and three non-union nursing homes in Connecticut. In 2012, worker pensions were eliminated, and their health care costs were increased. SEIU Local 1199 is fighting to protect the livelihoods of the workers, and HealthBridge is accused under federal law of alleged union busting.
Fear, intimidation, even racism is part of that plan every day. We go through a lot of that. Put fear on the workers, we can control them. But they don't never give us a fair chance to say, you know, why we need a union. We need a voice at this plant. And the intimidation and the fear, it really needs to stop.
Keep these worker and union voices on the air by supporting Workers Independent News. Donate now at laborradio.org. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Thank you. The National Labor Relations Act was a new initiative which helped save American capitalism by creating a process which would protect the rights of employees and employers. This was before NAFTA, GATT, and the WTO, which tore legal rights for workers apart, moved millions of jobs out of the U.S. Yes, we stand for the workers at Boeing in Washington State, but we also stand for the workers at Boeing in South Carolina, because they will have no recourse if Boeing wants to move jobs to China. You can't say you want to create jobs here at home while destroying the rights of workers to organize, the right to collective bargaining. These are basic rights in a democratic society. You can't say you want to protect American jobs and not protect American workers. Take away workers' rights to free speech, take away workers' rights to due process, and you create a new class of slave laborers here in the United States who are helpless to stop the movement of jobs out of America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. You know, that one statement right there, I mean, really resonates with me. You can't be for American jobs if you're not for American workers. And I would say you can't be for jobs at all anywhere if you're not for workers. This idea that we need to be business friendly and, whatever they want, we're going to give at some point has to stop. A little bit of history today. Back in 1894, miners in Cripple Creek, Colorado, began what was to become a five-month-long strike over the fact that the mine owners cut wages from $3 a day down to $2.50. and along the way raised all of their prices at the company store, the company doctor, the company controlled everything. What's interesting about the Cripple Creek strike and all of that is first time in U.S. history, in fact, only time in U.S. history that the militia was called out on the side of workers. And oddly enough, the strike actually ended up in a victory for the workers. If you go back to our history, the militia was always called out to shoot workers in the back and to control them, to protect property over people, profits over people. Sound familiar? Anyway, the big news today and the right-wing outrage of the day is that dreaded NLRB. They issued some new rules that the right wing is finally getting around to. We're here to talk about that and fill us in on the good and the bad, if there's any ugly. I've got John Logan. He's a professor of and director of labor and employment studies at San Francisco State University. He's also written a piece over at The Hill. We've got at length at TheRickSmithShow.com. John, thanks for taking time for us.
Glad to be on, Rick.
So I guess the dreaded NLRB's at it again, the job-killing organization known as the Labor Relations Board. They're at it again, huh?
Yeah, and this is, as you know, I mean, it's really part of this of Republican attack on the NLRB and on, you know, workers' rights in general that's really been going on since the start of the Obama administration, after we had the failure to enact the Employee Free Choice Act. The Republicans switched their attention to the National Labor Relations Board. The board had done a couple of things to try and to, you know, around the margins to try and improve the processes, to modernize them, to strengthen workers' ability to choose a union just a little bit. And one of the things they did was to issue an election rule back in 2011 to try and get rid of the worst cases of pre-election delay, you know, try and get rid of the cases where employers would deliberately engage in delaying tactics to delay an election for months and months and months in the hope that that would undermine workers who are trying to form a union. Eventually, the courts ruled against that, the election, that they struck down the election rule, but on a technicality, because they said there wasn't a sufficient number of confirmed board members who voted for it. And you remember that's because, you know, the Republicans were blocking the president's ability to nominate people to the board. So now that we have a fully confirmed board, we have five people on the board, they've reissued the rule that they came out with back in June 2011, which again, you know, really is only designed to do away with the very worst cases of pre-election delay and to provide unions with phone numbers and email addresses for workers after they successfully petition for a representation election. At the moment, they get names and addresses, but those are provided to the board by the employer. They're often outdated. They're incomplete. So this is, you know, it's a modernizing process somewhat. But, you know, of course, the usual suspects, the Republicans in the Congress and the anti-union organizations, the National Right to Work Committee, you know, the ludicrously misnamed Coalition for a Democratic Workplace and others, they will do everything they can to try and block these election rules, not because the rules are radical, but, you know, just because anything that threatens the sort of stranglehold that corporations have over this process of who gets to choose a union is something that they'll do anything to try and defeat. So, you know, the rule has been issued. There'll be a public comment period. There'll be public hearings in April. And then, you know, after that, when the final rule comes out, we'll have the inevitable legal challenges, and it will go through the courts and we'll try and tie it up legally and, you know, try and get, you know, a sort of sympathetic court to strike it down. But, you know, it's a good thing that the board has come out with this. It's not going to radically change things, and, you know, it wouldn't be as surprising if ultimately, you know, the courts side with Republicans, as they often do, because, you know, for some reason, employers' so-called free speech rights, you know, the right to intimidate and threaten people at the workplace,
Well, we've got to be business friendly, John. You know how that goes. But you know the thing that gets me, you said that this isn't radical change. And the employer in the business class, this is really radical change because it's actually, even if you and I think it's a very, very small advancement, any advancement, anything from the path that we're on, which is total oblivion of workers' rights, that's radical to them.
Right, and absolutely. And if you look at the rhetoric that they use, to oppose this, and, you know, they talk about what an abomination it is, and they talk about, you know, the radical pro-union agenda of the Obama NLRB, you know, you would think that the board were trying to do away with, you know, free market capitalism. You know, we had a similar ridiculous fight when the board issued a rule requiring employers to post workers' rights under the National Labor Relations Act, you know, requiring them to post what is federal law in the workplace so that, you know, workers know that they have the right to choose a union just as they know what the minimum wage is, just as they know what, you know, other labor and employment rights are. And, you know, the way that, the employers and the anti-union groups and Republicans reacted to that, you know, you would have thought that they were being asked to post excerpts from the Communist Manifesto, when in actual fact what they were being asked to do was to post what is the law of the land. And
well, we don't want workers to know what their rights are, John. We don't want them to know.
Absolutely not. Yeah, you're right. So, you know, this is the really galling thing about it. You know, these are the groups who, whenever they oppose something like this, they always oppose it in the name of workers' rights. You know, so, you know, they're opposed to shorter election periods because, you know, they want workers to be able to hear both sides of the story and to make fully informed decisions.
Yeah.
You know, in reality, they want more time for employers to be able to intimidate and coerce their employees. But, you know, we're supposed to believe that they're doing this in the name of workers' rights. And yet these are the same people who didn't even want workers to know what their rights were. You know, they opposed, you know, the posting of federal law in the workplace. So, you know, they call, you know, they ludicrously call this election rule, they call it ambush elections, you know, that unions will be able to ambush employers so that they won't be able to get their anti-union message across. And, you know, we all know that, you know, the Walmarts and the Home Depots and the Amazons and all of these other, you know, they don't wait for an election to happen before trying to get their anti-union message across.
Nope.
You know, from the very first day that employees are hired at these places, you know, they're forced to watch anti-union videos. You know, they're forced to attend these captive audience meetings where they hear the employer's anti-union message again and again and again. So the idea that, you know, the employer who has exclusive right to employees at the workplace, who can force them to attend these captive meetings and sack them if they refuse to attend, where pro-union workers have no right of reply, where they can force people to watch the videos, they hire the consultants, they hire the law firms. The idea that they won't be able to get their message across, you know, it's obviously ludicrous. And, you know, so they're outraged. You know, you have to believe at some level their outrage is completely phony and that they know. I mean, they know how ridiculous their arguments are, but they make them anyway.
Well, they make them, John, because they think we're going to buy them. And sadly, I've talked to so many people who go, well, you know, they should have rights. Yeah, they should. I go, well, what about the day they hired you? Because I've talked to numerous people who have gotten hired by big box retailers and especially right now with all the organizing going on around the fast food industry. Right. What interview questions now, which...
Yep.
You know, what's your position on unions in the interview? To where if I go in and I'm looking for a job and I say, well, you know, I'm sympathetic to the unions, I don't get the job.
Yeah, no, that's right. I mean, they've become very sophisticated about weeding out people who they think would be most likely to be sympathetic to the unions in the first place, and then the others, you know, they make it very clear from your very first day on the job that you know, that this company does not want the union. Not want a so-called third party between the employees and the management, and that the workers would suffer individually and collectively if the workplace were to become unionized. You know, there's actually an interesting story about the UAW campaign to organize in Volkswagen at the moment. Volkswagen is actually refusing to engage in an anti-union campaign, and you know,
that. Isn't that amazing?
You know, these things, you know, not only do you have a right to do this, you have an obligation to do it.
Yeah, you're letting down the class.
Yes, and so the National Right to Work Committee, you know, ludicrously, and, you know, I mean, it's actually great. You know, they're saying, you know, we're outraged that Volkswagen is not giving the anti-union workers, you know, they've found like four anti-union workers who wanted to sue the employer and sue the union. We're outraged that, you know, that Volkswagen is not giving these anti-union workers an equal platform and not giving them the right to reply. Well, you know, when did the pro-union workers ever, you know, when did they, you know, anyone ever stand up for their right to reply to these captive audience meetings, to the one-on-one meetings, to the supervisors, to the anti-union videos? You know, supervisors get fired if they refuse to participate in anti-union campaigns. But, you know, they don't see any irony that they're now complaining that an employer who's deciding not to run an anti-union campaign and to stay neutral is not giving time to anti-union, you know, employees, anti-union workers. It's just, that, you know, the arguments are ridiculous. But as you say, I mean, they make them, you know, some people buy them because, you know, they are able to get their arguments out. You know, they have the money, they have the organizations.
Yeah, I mean, it's insane. Last question I've got for you then. You know, we look at this and it's, you know, we've talked about the Volkswagen thing, you know, a German company heavily unionized in Germany. In other countries,
do they
have these captive audience meetings? Do they have
this
long
and
period of abuse and beatings? Do they have the same things that we endure in this country?
In almost no other country do we get this kind of phenomenon. I mean, the whole anti-union campaign, you know, the consultants, the lawyers, the captive audiences, the videos, all the rest of it. But, you know, the captive audiences in particular is an interesting question. You know, there's been a number of academics who have written on this. And in almost every other developed nation where it addresses this in the law, it's totally prohibited. You know, that you would not be able to force employees during working time to attend these meetings on penalty of dismissal to listen to your anti-union speeches, you know, day after day during an organizing campaign. So in countries like Germany and Spain, Brazil, you know, and all of the other countries in which Volkswagen, as you said, I mean, every other major Volkswagen plant in the world outside of China has an independent union, has a union in China, just not really an independent one, but with the exception of Tennessee. And, you know, in all of these other countries, you know, the workers would not be subjected to these intensive and aggressive and often quite sophisticated anti-union campaigns. Because, you know, we know that, you know, American employers, and particularly the law firms that they engage, they've really taken sort of opposition to unions to a sort of fairly fine art.
Yep.
I mean, they know exactly what they need to do in order to ensure that it's really the employer and the employer's law firm that gets to choose whether or not the workplace gets a union and not the workers. I mean, the law is intended to support free choice of the workers, but that's not what happens.
Yeah, I know. And what, I mean, you can look at it as, say, well, you know, we like to raise our finger and say, we're number one, we're exceptional. Yeah, we're exceptional in allowing our workers to be beaten up and taken on. John, it was great talking with you. I appreciate you taking time for us. Great article. And again, you can look at the article, NLRB election rules promote basic fairness at work, written by John Logan, professor of labor and employment studies at San Francisco State University. I've got a link at thericksmithshow.com. Just click on John's name. John, it's always great talking to you. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Rick. Bye.
Let's take a quick break. Back with your thoughts. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
In this wicked world of woe, there are hucksters, flimflammers, plain old crooks, and Republican members of the California Assembly. This last bunch of scoundrels went out of their way to monkey wrench the rollout of President Obama's new health care law.
Obama's own computer geniuses were making a hash of the initial rollout in October, but the sign-up was finally smoothing out, and with any Obama success, GOP lawmakers automatically start tossing monkey wrenches. This time, the tool they tossed is a fake website created by the California Republican legislators in August to look like the state's official health care exchange site, where people can sign up to get coverage under the Affordable Care Act. When things finally got worked out on the National Healthcare Exchange in November, the Republicans mailed a pamphlet to their constituents directing them to the decoy site, calling it a resource guide to help them navigate the ACA sign-up process. Far from help, however, the faux site is a trap. It's filled with boilerplate Republican propaganda against the law, gimmicks to discourage viewers from even applying for the health care they need, and a rash of distortions and outright lies. There's so much bunkum on the site that its fine print includes a disclaimer saying they don't vouch for, quote, the quality, content, accuracy, or completeness of the information it provides. The silliest thing about the lawmakers' blatant political ploy is that even if it convinces some people to forego the ACA's benefits, who does that hurt? Not Obama, but their own constituents. I know there's no IQ requirement to be a state legislator, but what were they thinking? This is Jim Hightower saying, we can have a good laugh at their low comedy and nincompoopery, but if you're a California taxpayer, congratulations! You paid for the GOP's bogus website and mailings. So much for that party's opposition to wasteful spending.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at HightowerLowdown.org.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.
We need to stand united, one divided, we shall never fall. Remember all, we need to trust in and then forever call on our brothers and our sisters. And are you and I aware? You and I both know that we can't rely on it. The time is time, fed at the line, ain't no mistaking. For union resurrection, the anger has awakened. A sleeping giant, come on, yeah, we can do it. We need to revive, react, and re-up the labor movement.
I got to tell you, the more we see these attacks going on by the Koch brother-funded GOP here in Pennsylvania, the more you're going to see labor uniting. And if you were at that rally last week, Tuesday, and saw the thousands of people in the state capitol, very motivated, very awake, very full of attention, kind of like what we were saying 3 years ago as we were in Wisconsin, sleeping on the marble floor, going, hey, you might want to think about organizing and being outraged about what's going on there in Wisconsin. For those who say that unions are a thing of the past, a little labor history today in 2008. 13 workers were killed on the job, 42 injured in a dust explosion at the Imperial Sugar Refinery in Port Wentworth, Georgia. What did the investigation find? What did our investigators find after 13 people were killed? Well, they found that the company had known about the dangers for years, but there was nobody there to make them do anything about it. And they didn't have to. Our regulators, hey, we don't want those regulators in there, those inspectors, that'd be bad. Job killers they are. Never mind our history. And let's go to the phone lines. I got Jake on line one. How are you doing tonight, Jake?
All right. Wanted to call in and maybe quickly make a comment on the governor's speech a couple of days ago.
Ah, the campaign speech.
Depends on who you talk to. I mean, the governor, he was quick to tout his $29.4 billion budget, and he quickly realized that education was key, so he rattled off a bunch of numbers, like he's going to give $10.1 billion for education. He said, I don't know how this is going to work, but he said he somehow strengthened the teacher's evaluation system. I mean, after all, we all know, Rick, that the teachers are the problem because of this administration's shortfall, but I'm not quite sure how that enters into how we're going to save money. He did invest $10 million in pre-K education. K-1 to K-12, about $241 million block grant programs, $341 million ready-to-learn programs statewide, $21 million for special education, $25 million for 2 to 4 year degrees for medium income students. And then he made mention about Pennsylvania is a great state to create jobs. He made mention that 60% of the American population is within about a day's drive.
Right. Yeah, you said that before. Back to the education quick. You know, since you rattled off a bunch of numbers, how much of that money is race to the top money? How much of it is federal money? And how much of it is state taxpayer money? Because, you know, what I've been saying is, we've got the money. It's just that this governor has prioritized tax cuts for big business, breaks for these people who take the money out of the state, and the money that he's actually putting into education is, one, some federal money, and two, a theft from the pension system as he's attempting to defund and underfund the pensions again, which is what got us into the pension situation to begin with.
There were several Democrats, Rick. I mean, you're zeroing in on the problem here. The collars, which are the agreed upon percentages that both sides, when you're talking about the state management, the state government, and the union, they agreed on a certain percentage. Well, he wants to cut back on the state's amount of money that they're putting into the pensions. Well, yeah, it looks good on a budget. I mean, this is a budget gimmick, but what he's doing is mortgaging the future, and we're going right back to where we were, and a lot of the Democrats called him on it. And then a lot of the Democrats, and it sounds like an old record, but, you know, there's no money coming in for – we could have incomes of millions and millions of dollars simply by taxing cigars. I mean, who's going to object to taxing cigars? What, the 1% who smoke the cigars? I mean, there's simple things, and then you get into the Delaware loophole. There was Senator Williams. He made mention that of all these tax breaks, and by the way, there's another nice increase in the amount of corporate tax breaks in this budget. But Senator Williams said there were 11,000 jobs we lost in this state last year from companies that had nice subsidies from the state. So this idea that that the corporate administration puts out, the more tax breaks you give them, the more corporate welfare, the more jobs that you're going to create just isn't sustainable, and it's just not accurate.
What? What? If we give them money, they won't create jobs? If we say, here's the pot of gold, they won't spread it around? Oh, say it's not so.
That's exactly right.
Hold on. You know what's funny to me, Jake, is that anybody would have bought that. I mean, for years, we've been hearing this trickle-down theory since the 80s, and it still stops me in my tracks and makes me scratch my head that anyone in this day and age would buy that same old, tired, failed, ridiculous argument. It just makes no sense to me.
Well, I understand what you're saying, but, you know, it's, what can I say, the Republican Party, always big forbidden business, and in some election that has worked. Now, here's the problem for this governor. He's got to justify every dollar. Now he's shortchanged and angered people. He's shortchanging education. He's not accepting Medicaid expansion. And when you start talking about more tax breaks, the public isn't too thrilled about that. So I think he might have overstated his case on this one. But I can tell you, of all the Democrats that talked, they were really angry, and they, you know, we don't have time to go into a lot of it. If I can, just for a minute, Rob McCord, I thought he was very good in what he said. He said he's short on community college funding. He's talking about education here. He's short on targeted tax breaks. Now, that's something governments have done, the state government has done, that have been successful, but this governor really doesn't target his tax breaks to the degree that it should be. He talked about the pension. That was another big push by the governor. He said he has the solution. You know, according to Rob, he said, look, you got to differentiate between the city pension, which are really in trouble, and the state pension problem. He said we can get out of that state pension problem if the state honors, and here's where the collars come in, the contribution level, and income rises by about 2% per annum. You know, these are all good comments, but the problem is that Corbett wants to fudge these numbers on the retirement.
It's an election,
and he wants to look good in the election year, and he just doesn't seem to be willing to step up with the right numbers. And some of the Democrats are saying, look, long-term, sustainable income, it just isn't there under his plan.
Yeah, and on Monday we're gonna have Rob McCord on the program to talk about the budget, his campaign, and, you know, the vision. Because I look at this budget, Jake, and do you see anything in this budget that tells you that this guy has any vision for what the future of this Commonwealth looks like, other than here's more handouts, more of the same, more welfare for the magic box in Delaware, more handouts for the drillers?
No. Senator Williams said exactly that. He said it's more the same, no vision. I have to say this. I think it was Senator Stack mentioned the fact that this governor has brought in some people to advise him as to how to make a speech, how to act before cameras and with the press.
Yeah.
And you could see that, quite honestly, his presentation compared to the last couple of years was better.
Yeah, well, they brought in the Bush people.
You know what I mean? You can dress up a pig, but it's still a pig, Rick.
Yeah, they brought in the W people. They brought in Bush's people.
He presented it better, but it's same old, same old.
They brought in Bush's people. And I'm going, really? You're going to bring in Bush's people? I guess, you know, it was what I found interesting, and I tweeted this out that, you know, it's interesting how the Republicans go nuts about Obama using the teleprompter. Did you notice that Corbett used the teleprompter, but did it really poorly?
Some other people have mentioned that, yes.
Well, there you go. Overall, wow. Last thing I got for you then. So the governor had his zinger line in there, which was, we're going to make it's the last call for the liquor stores.
Yes. Well, the talk is up in the hill that if they do try that, they're going to try it around the edges. They're not going to come back with the same offer. I can tell you this, the parties, the constituents in this whole play, this whole deal, some of them that normally vote Republican were very upset. I'm not so sure that the governor is going to be able to pull it off, but I'm sure he's going to make another attempt. Hopefully he'll fail. And hopefully this is the last attempt at it.
Well, what I'm hoping is this is the last call for the governor. Give him a bottle, pat him on the back. We'll give him a bottle of the finest wine that we make here in Pennsylvania. Pat him on the back and send him on his way to South Carolina so he can live in his home that he didn't bother reporting. Seems to me.
You're exactly right. And if I could say just one thing, and I think it was Jay Costa that said, you want to talk about specific job creation? I mean, we all know this guy is bad. 2010, 86,000 jobs were created. Last year, this governor created 10,000 jobs.
No, not the governor.
Very, very precipitous drop in 3 years.
His bad policies.
Horrible, horrible job creation record.
Yep. Horrible policy.
And this is the same governor that wants the poor who accept Medicaid expansion money to either have a job or be looking for a job.
And pay premiums. Don't forget the premiums.
Yep. That's right.
Gotta have a skin in the game, Jake. Don't you know?
That's right.
Thanks for the call, man. I appreciate it.
All right, Rick.
Always great talking with you. Yeah, I mean, you know, gotta have skin in the game. Because if they don't, then they'll abuse it. You know, like when they're sick, they'll go to the hospital. Oh, jeez. Just amazing stuff. Let's take a quick break right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
We want the world and we want it now. We're going to take it anyhow. We want the airwaves.
Not right wing. Just right. The Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. The National Labor Relations Board proposed a new rule this week that would shorten the process for union organizing elections. AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka says it's a step in the right direction. Teamsters President Jim Hoffa says his union supports the new rules. Hoffa says it will help stop companies from abusing the legal process to stall elections and delay the union organizing that workers want. The proposed rule change would require businesses to provide email addresses and phone numbers of employees to give unions fair access to the workers in an election. A similar rule was proposed 2 years ago and business groups challenged it in court. NLRB Chairman Mark Pierce says the new rule will speed up union organizing elections, getting rid of delays and inefficiencies that hurt both workers and employers. At the United Auto Workers Legislative Conference in Washington this week, Vice President Joe Biden told UAW delegates that right-wing forces are waging long-term, intense, concentrated war on the House of Labor. Biden said unions like the UAW are the only ones keeping the barbarians from the gates. Biden says the right to collective bargaining itself is being attacked, and if unions vanish, Biden said, the middle class evaporates. Biden was hailed by UAW President Bob King as a strong and steadfast friend of the UAW.
I still know how to pronounce the word union. Union. One of our problems is not enough elected officials remember how to pronounce the word union. Everybody talks about workers. I talk about unions. Every other worker, white collar and blue collar, not a union member, has figured out the reason they had benefits in the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, and the 90s was because of organized labor.
Roughly 600 workers at five nursing homes in Connecticut operated by HealthBridge have had pay cuts imposed on them by a bankruptcy court. The cuts will average about $30 a week. HealthBridge runs five union nursing homes and three non-union nursing homes in Connecticut. In 2012, worker pensions were eliminated and their health care costs were increased. SEIU Local 1199 is fighting to protect the livelihoods of the workers, and HealthBridge is accused of federal law of alleged union busting.
Fear, intimidation, even racism is at plant every day, and we go through a lot of that. Put fear on the workers, we can control them, but they never give us a fair chance to say, you know, why we need a union. We need a voice at this plant. And the intimidation and the fear, it really needs to stop.
Keep these worker and union voices on the air by supporting Workers Independent News. Donate now at laborradio.org. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
The most important issues of the day. This is the Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, therickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. So let's go over it. We'll find out what's going on in the Ukraine. I've got Zach Badoff. He's from with Talk Radio News Service. He is in Kyiv, the Ukraine, right now as the uprising and stuff is going on there. Zach, thanks for taking time for us.
Of course. Thanks for having me on.
What's going on?
Yeah, so I was just earlier today at the protest area in Kyiv, Ukraine. It's known as Maidan, and Maidan means literally square in Ukrainian. And there are thousands of protesters who are living there, protesting there, and they're basically fed up with corruption and with crackdown on freedoms within the country. I know initially this protest started back in November, and at that point it was really about the EU and versus Russia.
Right.
And so basically what happened was at that point, the EU was going to do a deal with the President Yanukovych, where they were going to basically create better economic integration, not sort of an accession into the EU, but rather focusing on making them more close economically. But still, that deal was canceled. The president instead turned to Russia, and Russia offered a $15 billion loan. And so now most of the country on the western side is fed up with this because they want closer EU integration. On the east and south, however, they're more closely linked to Russia.
Right.
And so there's this sort of divide within the country.
Now, you know, again, you know, $15 billion is a lot of money, and I'm sure it comes with an awful lot of strings from Putin and Russia. And I would have to assume that that's a big part of it.
Exactly. Yeah, there are definitely going to be some strings there. And I should add that, you know, what we've done since we've been here in the country is we went down to Sevastopol, which is in the south, in the Crimea, and this is a heavily dominated Russia area. And we're talking to people there. It's a totally different perspective than what we got at Maidan Square. People were saying they view the protesters as vandals, see them as, you know, vigilantes who are destructive, and they don't really support them at all down there. So that's really the stronghold for the president, where that's where he gets his support, the Russian-speaking area of the country that's more closely aligned with Russia. So it's been really interesting for us to see this dichotomy between the two sides of Ukraine. And that's really, and this is not something new. Historically, Ukraine had this divide. But I think universally across the country, there is some frustration about corruption.
Yeah, I think that's everywhere. And I think you see these divides not just in the Ukraine, but probably just about in every country, as you see the political divide and all of the corruption on all sides of the political spectrum.
Absolutely. And you know, the thing about it is, the question that comes to my mind is, what do you do about it? Do you hold an Occupy Wall Street? Do you go to the Maidan Square in Kiev? Or do you just sit back? And so I think what the folks here in Kiev have decided to do is they want to stand up, and they're occupying government buildings. They're coming together, they're uniting. And I think it really will be sort of an incubator for future change within the Ukrainian, this younger generation. We've met a number of really inspirational activists in the square. At the same time, you also see a small contingent of militias really running in this area, protecting the square. They have batons. Someone told us they saw a gun, but they also have Molotov cocktails ready to throw at the police. So it's really, there's sort of a militant aspect to this as well that is really disconcerting.
So this could erupt into a civil war, is what you're telling me.
Yeah, people do bring that up. And, you know, the interesting thing about that is when we were down in Sevastopol in Crimea, this is also the home, interestingly enough, to a Russian naval military base. And Russia has a number of thousands and thousands of special forces, of sailors, of different military troops down there. And because of the support and closer integration with Russia in this area, they very well could send forces up into this area, and that's where they would bring it out of. So, yeah, there is a definite possibility of that. And if that were to happen, Russia would surely be involved.
So since there is a military base in that region, it's not surprising that region would be in favor of, because there's got to be a lot of economic benefit to having that military base there. I would assume a lot of the locals probably work there.
You're absolutely right. And, you know, another interesting thing about that is that many of the Ukrainians who live down there are also Russian citizens. What happens is many of the Russian sailors will come, and they relocate there. And the salaries for Russian sailors are, we heard, roughly 5 to 6 times what the local salaries are.
Wow.
So there's a lot of money coming in there. So, and it's a big influx and a very important part of the economy down there.
So you could make the argument that, you're looking at very self-interest. They see the economic benefit of having these close ties with the Russians, so that naturally I would think that they would want that to extend to the whole country on some level. So I would have to think that that's the reason you found very pro-Russian support in the region, in the southern region where you were.
That's certainly a part of it. I mean, the other parts do not have Russian military bases to grow economically, but there's certainly economic trade between the two countries that are bordering each other, right? So, I mean, there is that incentive for people to keep that close links with Russia as opposed to Europe on the western side of the country.
How close are we to getting into this? Because, you know, I had heard something, and I didn't get all of it, that there was some talk of somehow, you know, beginning, like what we do with every other country, bringing arms into certain areas and backing certain groups, where we're basically now we're picking sides, and this could turn into another Western world, you know, Soviet kind of bloc type tension here, where you've got the powers on each end using this area as almost a little battleground, if you will.
You know, I didn't really see any overt U.S. or even EU support of these opposition groups. Now, that doesn't mean that it's not happening behind closed doors. I'm sure the U.S. in different ways is talking to these different opposition groups. The challenge, I think, with a lot of these oppositions is that, you know, I would say, as in many countries, the people in the capital are not necessarily representative of the people throughout the country. So you have a bunch of protesters in this one square in Kiev. Are they really representative of the rest of the people? I think what they're doing is they're expressing some sentiment that a lot of people do feel about their discontent of corruption and crackdown on freedoms, as well as there's some people's desire to integrate more closely with Europe. But I think it's I don't know how how much the U.S. has actually done. And in fact, we had people tell us that they prefer that the U.S. do more because, you know, they feel like the U.S. is sort of standing on the sidelines. But you may have heard that the EU and the U.S. are sort of talking. The Assistant Secretary of State for the U.S. was just in town today. She held a press conference at the embassy. And so the U.S. is there, but sort of on the sidelines.
Right. So let me ask you, you know, as you're looking at this, because I understand earlier in the week there was supposed to be some legislation on pulling back some of the really draconian stuff that they had passed early on, you know, making, you know, public gatherings almost illegal. That, I guess, some movement backwards. And when we talked to Luke the other day, he said, you know, yesterday's legislative day was a big day. What happened, if anything?
Not much. No, I haven't heard of any progress being made in the parliament. I think that, you know, one of the challenges is, and one of the reasons why Ukraine is really not so much in the news anymore, even though this is a really terrifically important issue geopolitically, is that it's sort of at a stalemate at the moment. I mean, you've got the two sides, and, you know, you've got the president who still retains a good amount of power, and you've got the protesters on the other side who have this controlled, this occupied area of Kiev. And they both are making a pretty hard stand. The protesters are saying, we will not leave until the president gets out. And in fact, we heard somebody say, I talked to one of the representatives of the Euromaidan, which is the protest movement, and they said, I asked, what do you want? And he said, a better life. And, you know, how do you achieve that? I think they're going to be there for a while. And I also think it should be noted that I think the president may hold back on being so callous with the use of military force and taking them out. I think he realizes that the harder his tactics are, the more he's going to enrage other people and
exactly.
Get them more involved.
Yeah, because I had asked Luke Vargas the last time we talked to him if the solution was just from the president and the power position is just to let the people stay and not come down with this iron fist and not beat these people over the head to where they're gonna gain sympathy even from people who may not agree with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. You know, what happened with the first protest is that, you know, it was initially very small, and then it has since grown. You know, when we were at a protest on Sunday that had perhaps 20 to 30,000 people, but they've numbered much, much larger crowds where the whole square has been filled up, hundreds of thousands of people. But at the moment, it's dwindling, in fact.
How are you and Luke being received there, the talk radio news contingent? You know, have you found yourselves in any hairy situations? Do the people seem to embrace you being there? What's the sentiment that you get?
I don't know if Luke mentioned this, but we did bring body armor and helmets. We were told by other journalists, as well as people I was in touch with beforehand, activists and the like, that there was the possibility that we would be shot at by government forces because, in fact, about 100 journalists, local journalists and other foreign journalists have been injured in some of the protests. So there's always that concern for us. But in terms of speaking to people, we have been very welcome in the protest area. Everybody has been tremendously helpful. Some people didn't want to speak to us. Some people preferred to use just their first name. There is definitely some fear of the state cracking down on them.
Yeah, retaliation.
But, you know, yeah, exactly. And you know, the other thing about it is that when we went down to Sevastopol in the south, we were a little bit concerned that we might get in trouble since this is a very military important area.
Yeah, you're going to a Russian naval base, man. Don't you think you could end up on a ship somewhere sending you going to Siberia? Come on.
The funny thing is we actually flew through Moscow, and both of us used the Moscow Wi-Fi. And from what I understand, everybody who flew through Moscow and used that Wi-Fi has now had their phones and computers hacked. So there may be a Russian spy listening to me speaking these words at this very moment. Who knows?
Well, I'm sure there probably are, if there's not an American spy listening to this program as well. I mean, with all of the revelations with what's going on with our NSA, I can only imagine it's 100 times worse in places like Russia and the Ukraine and other places around the world.
Yeah, I mean, the security services are pretty brutal. And, you know, Luke may have mentioned this as well, but, you know, there are definitely people who have been abducted, and they turn up later to have been tortured, and they get dumped in the woods naked, and you know, 5 protesters have been killed so far.
So how long are you planning on staying there? When are you coming back? Because I got to be honest with you, I give you guys the utmost credit for going. I just don't know that there are many brains there, in my view. Now, you do what you're going to do, but I got to be honest. And maybe it was something I would have done in my 20s, but now that I'm a little older and look back and go, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm 30, so I've been doing this for a little while. But we, you know, today is Friday, and we are heading off early tomorrow morning. We have to leave for the airport in about 4 or 5 hours, so we don't have too much time left.
So on the ground, though,
what's the
most surprising thing you've come across?
You know, I think the most interesting thing for me was to see the real strength that the president has outside of the Capitol. And, you know, it's very easy just to watch, you know, what you see mostly in the news, where it's focused on the protests in the Capitol. But that's not always, as I said, not very representative of the entire population.
Right.
So speaking to people in the South, they were really very adamant in their opposition to these protesters.
I mean, you can make the same arguments about a lot of the issues here in the U.S. as well. It is what it is. I wish you guys nothing but a safe return. Be careful. Keep your heads down. And I'd love to talk to you about your experience when you get back.
That'd be great. Thank you again for having me on.
Zach, thanks so much. Be safe. Zach Badoff, Talk Radio News Services. Occupation correspondent. I give the guy credit, man. I think twice. Let's take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Of, for, and by We the Working People. The Rick Smith Show.
In this wicked world of woe, there are hucksters, flimflammers, plain old crooks, and Republican members of the California Assembly. This last bunch of scoundrels went out of their way to monkey wrench the rollout of President Obama's new health care law. Obama's own computer geniuses were making a hash of the initial rollout in October, but the sign-up was finally smoothing out, and with any Obama success, GOP lawmakers automatically start tossing monkey wrenches. This time, the tool they tossed is a fake website created by the California Republican legislators in August to look like the state's official healthcare exchange site, where people can sign up to get coverage under the Affordable Care Act. When things finally got worked out on the National Healthcare Exchange in November, the Republicans mailed a pamphlet to their constituents directing them to the decoy site, calling it a resource guide to help them navigate the ACA sign-up process. Far from help, however, the faux site is a trap. It's filled with boilerplate Republican propaganda against the law, gimmicks to discourage viewers from even applying for the health care they need, and a rash of distortions and outright lies. There's so much bunkum on the site that its fine print includes a disclaimer saying they don't vouch for, quote, the quality, content, accuracy, or completeness of the information it provides. The silliest thing about the lawmakers' blatant political ploy is that even if it convinces some people to forego the ACA's benefits, who does that hurt? Not Obama, but their own constituents. I know there's no IQ requirement to be a state legislator, but what were they thinking? This is Jim Hightower saying, we can have a good laugh at their low comedy and nincompoopery, but if you're a California taxpayer, congratulations! You paid for the GOP's bogus website and mailings. So much for that party's opposition to wasteful spending.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at HightowerLowdown.org.
This is the Media Matters Minute. I'm Samantha Wyatt. In a Change.org petition, high school student Jewel Moore asked Disney to consider a plus-size princess character, saying it would help girls who feel ugly for not fitting the skinny standard. Fox and Friends invited Emmy, a plus-size supermodel, and Mimi Roth, a self-described obesity expert, on to discuss the petition.
Beauty within our children's movie and entertainment industry is askew to the thinner side.
Oh, please. Katniss is fit, Mulan was fit, Pocahontas was
fit. There is a few representations outside of
us. So you want them to be plus size? You want them to be overweight? This sounds like mob mentality. No, I'm not missing any plus size.
What I'm saying.
It's unhealthy. If you like cancer and diabetes, if you want fertility problems, then plus size is beautiful.
It is important to note that plus size does not mean obese. Plus Model Magazine reports that plus size models are on average between the sizes of 6 and 14. For more on this and other stories, please visit MediaMatters.org.
There was a controversial remark made by a member of your legal team comparing gay marriage to the union of 12-year-olds, saying both are illegal, which you called inappropriate.
It was an inappropriate analogy. You know, I think a much better analogy would have been brother and sister, don't you?
I don't know.
Well, we
know. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Much better. Yeah, he got out of one fire, stepped right into another. Kind of just makes you laugh, doesn't it? I mean, really, honestly, and truthfully, just kind of makes you laugh. But the sad thing is this guy's our governor. Jeez. You know, it's just scary stuff. And, you know, it was the other thing that got me. You remember the comment when they were trying to do the transvaginal ultrasound thing, where if before you go to have an abortion, they wanted to make you go to a doctor. And you remember his statement on that?
Right. Well, the question was asked of me, and if you saw the whole press conference, and the media there didn't, you know, bat an eye at it. I said, you can't make somebody watch it. They can put the monitor in front of them, but you can't make them watch it.
Right. No, you can't make them watch it. But you can stick them with the thing there. The numbers, evidently, of abortions have come down. Now, the folks like Corbett would want to say, well, it's because we did these things. We made them look. We made them endure the probing by the state. Now, rates have gone down from 2008 to 2011. National abortion rate has declined by 13%, according to the Guttmacher Institute. Actually, the lowest level since the legalization due to Roe versus Wade. Now, people would say that, you know, hey, it's Corbett, it's all of this push nationally to go after this. They're saying no, not so much. What's actually going on is people are using birth control. People are using contraception. People are getting educated. And, you know, the thing that's good, the way I look at it is good, all of this talk about contraception, all of this in the media that, you know, well, I don't want to have to pay for it, is making people go, hey, maybe we should be using it. Now, interestingly enough, there have been a number of studies out there that show that these ultrasounds, these sonograms, all this stuff don't actually change anyone's mind. Yeah. According to Guttmacher's new report, they've concluded that the abortion rate isn't declining because fewer women are choosing abortion in favor of giving birth. They're doing it because they're not getting pregnant in the first place. Which, I got to be honest, kind of what I've been saying all along. Yeah, if you're against abortion, how about we prevent before? Just a thought. And this is where I would think that, you know, folks would be all in favor of making sure that contraception was readily available. Just a thought. Anyway, if you missed any portion of the program, TheRickSmithShow.com, that's where you go to get the podcast that you're on the smartphone. All of that, you can email me, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. I do answer all emails personally. Look forward to it. In fact, you know, some of the ones this past week, very entertaining. I look forward to the coming week. I'm going to have Rob McCord on the program. I'm going to go after a number of the gubernatorial candidates and, you know, keep looking at the budget. To me, the budget is really important. We'll see you. Have a good one.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Together, we can make America better. Email rick@therickSmithShow.com or interact with us anytime at therickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide flood beneath the Buddha sway. Imperial, mysterious, in amorous raid. The mother.